Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We got a stacked show for everybody today. I hope everybody enjoyed this past weekend fights. Some fights we had this past weekend. I mean, Showtime, again, nailed it. You know, when we talk about Golden Boy, sometimes we point out the bad that they do, but sometimes we point out the great that they do. Well, we're going to point out some of the bad stuff that they did today. And one was overlooking Josecito Lopez from the Thompson promotion stable with head trainer Henry Ramirez and thinking that this was going to be an easy fight. Now, let me take that back. Let me take the word thinking, because people hang on words sometimes of things that we say here on Leaving the Ring. Not just the listeners, but people in the business. I don't think they thought this was going to be as tough as they thought it was going to be. I think they thought this is going to be a good run for Victor Ortiz. This is going to be a good test for him to keep him busy so that he doesn't get stale for September 15th against Saul Canelo Alvarez. But like I mentioned before, this is a kid that comes to fight. If you've never paid attention to his career, if you never bothered to even watch him, or even kind of, you know, when you hear the announcement of these two guys, two warriors, I use warriors because regardless of what you think of Victor Ortiz or what we have said about him, I think we have to eat a little bit of crow here. The kid fought his ass off. The kid fought his heart. And I think he did really try to leave it in the ring. But going back to what I was saying is that when the announcement of these two warriors at the Staple for last week, you would have went back and said, let me find out just a little bit more about Josecito Lopez. And then you would have said, you know what, this is a very competitive fight. I got to tell you this, there were some scary moments for Lopez thinking he was not going to get out of this, that he might have been testing himself a little bit too much, might have been pushing himself a little too much of trying to stay on top of Ortiz, because you did see that those punches that he was landing, they were flush, they were hard, they did rock Josecito, he had him buckled a few times, but there was no going home tonight in that kid at all. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, that was the thing, you know, Josecito, he got disrespected. You know, they made a whole other fight, and it was a really silly fight, in my opinion. The more you watch the Lopez versus Ortiz, the more you realize that Golden Boy just – I know they get mad at me for criticizing their matchmaking. And granted, we didn't even see Ortiz versus Canelo, and Styles do make fights. I think it would be a very exciting fight for as long as it lasted. But this isn't fantasy boxing. You can't – just say, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to move Ortiz up. He's barely proven at 147. He's 1-1. Now he's 1-2 at 147. Why were they thinking that they could just move him on up to 154, plug him in against Canelo? I know it was one of their few names that they had available. But you know, they had a perfectly good fighter in Arislandi Lara that's sitting right there. They could have made that fight. It's a fight everybody wanted. And I know Lara doesn't have the biggest draw in the world, and he's a rough style, and maybe you want to build towards that, and that would be bad matchmaking to just put Canelo in with a guy as experienced and dangerous as him. But, again, he's a champion, so he should be defending against the top people, and you can only run away from that for so long. I mean, look at his counterpart at 160, Chavez Jr. He's fighting the toughest guy in the division, or at least the top man in the division besides himself, in terms of drawing power. Chavez Jr. is number one, probably. Well, maybe the Europeans actually beat him, but in America, he's the top guy, or at least in North America and in Mexico. But he's taking on Martinez. What's Canelo's problem? I imagine if it was up to him, he'd fight anybody. But looking at this fight, you know, now you look, you know, hindsight's 20/20. We can all say, wow, you know, they should have looked out for Lopez. And maybe they should have. I mean, this is a tough, hard-nosed kid. I think we all felt the same thing. He wouldn't be strong enough at 147. He wouldn't have the power to hurt Victor. But you watch his technique in the fight and the way mentally he committed and the tone that he set, the kind of go for broke, I'm going to get in here and fight with you. I'm going to make you fight. And I'm going to take your shots. I'm not going to back up, and I'm not going to back off. The way he fought, he had to get a knockout. He had to break down Ortiz. It's what he did the house on, and he pulled it off. It's, to me, that card that weekend, Alberto Soto and Matisse and then Lopez-Ortiz, this is why we watch this sport, these two fights.
Absolutely.
Awesome to watch. Awesome to watch. Fantastic fights.
We got a good show. A good lineup for tonight. I believe we do have Josecito Lopez going to be calling in at 5:15, among some other names that we're going to be putting in. But I'm going to patch in somebody that wasn't scheduled, but I did speak to him a little earlier, which is the manager of Victor Ortiz, to speak to him. Just a 5-minute thing. Yeah, you know, just to find up the update about Victor and where do they go from now, because there has been some reports, but I think he's the man to speak to. I know he's on vacation, so it's just going to be short and brief. And it's Rolando Arellano, who is the manager of Victor Ortiz. So let's see if we can get a hold of him. He's out and about. He just got out of the ocean, hanging out with some beautiful ladies, he said, on his vacation time. So, but he said, let's stop it up for a quick minute. And he said, if he doesn't answer right away, to call him right back, because he might be in the shower washing off the salt off his body. So hopefully he answers.
I'm sorry, but the person you called, the boy.
What was that?
That's an image I needed. Rolando Arellano in the shower, washing off the sea.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get him. I did text him and let him know that we were going to call him right now. So hopefully we can.
I actually got a little interview that I did with him recently, a little while back, when he announced his fight, actually. Keep forgetting to print it. I need to print it, like, very soon. This is his thoughts on drug testing and everything that is going on. He's kind of an educated guy in that field. We should keep trying him. That way we can.
He is. I mean, you know, he's got what I like. You know what I like about Rolando is when you do talk to him. Hey, Rolando, how you doing, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leaving the Ring Radio.
What's up, gentlemen? How are you?
Doing good, brother. Doing good, man.
How are you?
Hello.
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you, but I'm just in an open space, like, may have a little difficulty hearing you, but what's up?
Hey, just really quick, congratulations. I know you guys didn't get the victory, but you definitely, your fighter showed the tremendous heart and the will that he has. I mean, he was really fighting to keep his spot. Now, can you give us the extent of the injuries, how Victor is doing, and what are we looking at for recovery for him?
Yeah, well, the extent of the injuries were a little bit more serious than most people. You know, most people thought that initially they said he had a broken jaw, but he had a broken jaw in two spaces and in two different areas, right? And I believe in the fifth round, jaw broke number one first time, and then in the ninth round it broke again. But in the ninth round, it launched something into the back of his neck where it actually cut a vein in there, and he started bleeding internally. So the doctor in the locker room basically said, look, guys, I'm not asking you to go to the hospital. I'm telling you to go to the hospital because he's bleeding out. And typically when you bleed out is when you have arterial bleeding.
Right.
So they took him to the hospital, and hospital one stabilized him, right? And, you know, thank God we got there enough time because we didn't know the real true extent of this. And then they basically said, listen, We don't deal with these types of severe injuries. You need to go to a special at Cedars-Sinai. So he went to hospital number two. They set up a surgery for him, and he was there under surgery for 2 hours. He got the titanium plate in his jaw with 3 screws in it.
Oh, wow. So let me ask you, after something like this happens, I mean, broken in two different spots, how much in danger is his boxing career after that? I mean, have the doctors told him, you know, you're going to have to take maybe a full year, 2 years off before you can even test it?
Well,
and see whether or not.
That was my primary concern, right? His
right.
His well-being, his safety, and his welfare. right, was my primary concern. But the doctor comes out and he says, look, man, the bone's going to be stronger than ever because, you know, when it heals and basically when you put a plate in there, you know, ain't nothing breaking that plate. This is what we make airplanes out of. And I go, okay, that's good. So that means is he going to fight again? Right? And he goes, absolutely, he can fight again. And then I tell him, what's your prognosis? And he goes, yeah, 4 to 6. 4 to 6, 6 months. He goes, we will monitor it as it goes along. And you know what? As you know, you bring him in a couple of weeks and we'll look. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. I'm listening. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You bring him in a couple of weeks and then we'll take his wire down and then we'll look at it. And you know what? We'll bring him in for follow up and we will gauge it as it goes along because it could be anywhere from 4 to 6 months.
That's good to hear. You know, I mean, you know, when hearing about those injuries, that was the first thing that popped in my head. I'm like, I know a lot of people are calling for a rematch, but I'm like, I mean, I'd love to see a rematch, but first I'd like to find out whether or not he's going to be able to get back.
Yeah, you know,
we've
got to make sure that he's able to, you
right.
know, to fight another day and stuff like that. You know what I mean? That was my concern. You know what? Are you going to be okay? Because if the doctor came in and basically said,
right.
hey, you know what, he can't fight, and Victor wanted to fight, he wasn't fighting under my flag, right? Because I don't do that to fighters. I don't cash in on them. Bullshit. They hire me for a reason. That's to protect them, right? Because, you know, and that's what I plan on doing. And when the doctor came in front of all of us, said, look, this jaw's going to be stronger than ever, immediately Victor wrote on a piece of paper, exercise my rematch clause.
Absolutely.
That
go ahead, Gabriel.
My next question, Rolando. This is Gabe. How you doing today, by the way?
Good, Gabe. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's a beautiful day in L.A., so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm in actually Catalina Island right now.
Stop
that, buddy.
Just because you're the most interesting man in the world, Rolando. How much of this, you know, you got to monitor the physical, but you kind of just answered my question. How much, you've been around, you know, a guy that was also very exciting like Ortiz, but kind of willing to take a lot of punches in Fernando Vargas. How much of the mental aspect are you looking at right now with him?
You know, absolutely. It's human nature, brother. You know, it's not boxing nature. It's not sports nature. It's human nature that when you break a hand, a limb, and the doctors say, hey, it's great, you're ready to go, you have a sense of reluctance to use whatever limb or whatever arm, whatever leg is, you know what, that you broke, right? Because, fuck, you're the one with the scar, with the injury, and you'll feel different things, you know? And basically, we clearly understand that, so we have to monitor him. You know what? When he told me to exercise the rematch clause, you know, this kid's saying, like, don't worry about me, man. You know what? Just make sure that you get me back in the ring. Now, with that said, you know what? Sometimes we have to protect fighters from themselves.
Right.
Because they're gladiators and they're warriors. Case in point, you know, broken jaw in the fifth. Locked open in the ninth, right? Someone needs to step in for this kid. And so we will monitor him in sparring, you know, and the way he looks, you know, and you know, when we'll know the first time he gets hit, you know, because we'll know that the jaw is fine for crying out loud. He'll have a titanium plate in there, right? The question is, does he believe it's fine? And
right.
I think we're gonna be okay. So the kid said, you know, he wasn't worried about, fuck, can I get back in the ring? Or, you know, is it going to break again? You know, am I going to get disfigured? He said, get me a damn rematch.
Wow.
And then he goes, I want to go home and work on my car. You know, so. it's interesting. It's interesting stuff, you know. And you get a lot of, look, you get a lot of the critics, right? And I appreciate their opinions, right? I appreciate it, but I don't have to validate their opinions, right? There's two types of opinions. Opinions that are based on fact. Right, and actual inferences, and then you reach a conclusion. But all these fucking people out there talking shit about Victor, excuse my language, you know, talking bad about Victor, right, that they didn't know that in fact he had a broken jaw. No, in fact he had two broken jaws, and that he had to hold his jaw closed with his glove for the fifth, sixth, seventh round until a punch locked it open, like the bone locked.
You could see it. His mouth was like hanging open. You know, or it was like it snapped open. He hit that button. I mean, I didn't feel that he needed to go any further. You know, I didn't.
Excuse me?
What's that? I didn't feel like he needed to go any further. Once that injury, you could tell that something was wrong when he called over Jack Reed.
His mouth was locked open. first it was he said, "Hey, coach, something happened in the fifth where, you know what? I noticed that, and he couldn't feel it because of the adrenaline, of course, right? You know what? My jaw kept closing. It kind of opened up, right? My jaw kept opening up, and then he goes, "Oh, fuck, it's broken. Because I can't, my brain wants to close it, but it's not reacting, right?" And then he said, he would have to hold his glove up, and then when he throws the punches, he would have to put his head towards his chest to keep it shut.
That is, I don't know. Any of us, none of us are ever going to experience something like that. And to say this kid does not have heart is just full.
Because you're not in the war zone, right? You're not getting the bullets. And
exactly.
Even Antonio Tarver said, "Nah, bullshit, he didn't break his jaw." You know what? Because I broke my jaw, and when you break a jaw, you can't go on another minute.
I think that it depends on each individual. You know what I mean? I mean, I've broken several of my toes and at work, and I continue to keep working where other guys would just end up going home. I think it just depends on the individual. But Rolando, I'm gonna let you go, brother, because I know you're out there and having a good time, and I just appreciate it you coming on and speaking to us.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And, call me anytime. And if I answer, great. If I don't, we'll get together.
Take care.
Awesome. Take care, man.
There you go. Rolando Arellano, the manager of Victor Ortiz, telling us the extent of injury that has happened with Victor Ortiz.
Ooh.
And that's some brutal stuff there, And I put it up.
I tweeted it all out. And you have to say that last detail, this is gruesome. The guy held his jaw shut with his glove, and then, he got popped open and locked in that position. That sucks. I mean,
it does.
I mean, is he going to be able to, like Blondie said, is he going to mentally be able to come back from that? Is he going to be able to trust that he's going to, get locked in the jaw and nothing's going to go bad? Is he going to be able to risk mentally and physically the way he used to with abandon? I don't know. Fernando Vargas seemed to always risk the same amount no matter how much he fought and how many bad things happened to him in the ring. Maybe Ortiz is cut from that cloth. We'll see.
At the same time, though, Fernando Vargas, sold his career short for being that type of a warrior. After the Ortiz, Tito Trinidad. I'm sorry, I'm reading at the same time trying to talk. Tito Trinidad fight. We kind of just saw that he wasn't the same guy. His jaw didn't hold up to the same. But you're right. There's a guy that Fernando Vargas did go through hell to try to win fights, but at the same time, some of that hell that he went through didn't have the burning flames that Victor had to go through with the Josito Lopez. And here's the ironic thing is that so many folks was like, Lopez is not going to be able to put a dent. He's not going to be able to hold him off. He's not going to be able to back Ortiz. And that feather-fisted kid was able to break Victor Ortiz's jaw. Not in one place, but in two.
Well, I think it was interesting. It's like the fights kind of mirrored each other. Matisse was the young, strong bull. He boxes, I think, much more intelligently than Ortiz, or a little more intelligently than Ortiz does. His defense is a little sneakier. He's a little more fluid, not so tense. But he's like the brawler in that fight. And Soto was kind of like Lopez, kind of the skinnier, lanky combination puncher, but his technique is really nice. But for Soto, he's like the third weight class, the fourth weight class. He's not a 140-pounder, no matter how tall he is. And his strength didn't translate. In Lopez's case, it did. And he was able to tame the kind of boxer brawler in Ortiz and break him down because his technique, you see some of the shots he misses. You can see good technique on misses. Like his left hook, it just whizzes through the air, and you can see it's a perfect hook. And if it landed, it would be very solid. He plants his feet and really commits. And it was that kind of commitment with his footwork just digging in that broke dude's jaw flat out. I bet Ortiz's jaw, he got probably tired. His mouth was open, and he got caught with something wild, nice and swinging and firm from Lopez, and that's what did it. snap, you know, and then happened again, snap, and popped open. Game over. Brutal, but awesome, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think of the PCA Soto fight?
You know what? Let me tell you this, okay? And I want to talk about that fight here. And we apologize to the people that have been on the hold that want to talk 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. Mr. David Chen, our producer, was running a bit late, so he's getting to everybody right now so they can ask who wants to talk here on the show.
I got Jose Cito. I'll be back.
Go ahead. So while we got Jose Cito, I'm going to hold off on my analogy and my take of my thesis versus Soto, which I thought was a – I mean, all of us thought this was going to be an entertaining fight. But I did say that Matisse, to me, in my opinion, was a bigger guy. And with Soto, how he likes to back himself up and trap himself at the ropes, that was going to be his death certificate. Just like I said about Lopez, you know, this was a guy, Lopez was coming in, he's a big kid. A lot of folks really didn't give him a chance. I even had some people going like, I don't give him a chance against Ortiz. And now they're like, damn, what a fight. I believe we got back my co-host with me. Gabe, you there?
Yep, and I'm here with Jose Cito Lopez, the man of the hour. They're calling him the Rocky from Riverside. Welcome, Jose Cito. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. It's overwhelming support that I've received the past few days, man. I'm still soaking it all in.
Absolutely, man.
You're the WBC Silver Welterweight champion now, right? And they gave you that belt?
Yes, that's what it is.
That's awesome. Dave, I want to pass it on to you so you can begin.
Thanks, brother. Jose Cito, first off, congratulations. And secondly, I should have stuck to my original pick, which was I was going to pick you to win, okay? And so I got to eat a little bit of crow here, you know, because I wasn't doubting what you brought to the table. The only doubt I did have that this was your first big fight at 147 pounds, and I didn't know how well you were going to react to a guy that is a lefty and sometimes can land that. He's got sometimes that blinding speed. He can land a big punch and turn a fight around. And we did see some shaky moments with you. You know, I mean, I saw your legs kind of buckle. Man, I got to tell you, every time I saw you get hurt, it was almost watching Eric Morales just try to get back his, you know, try to get his punch back in. I mean, your state of mind, I think that everything, all the stars and all the moons were just aligned just for you perfectly, because the state of mind that you had for this fight here, I don't think you'll ever grab that moment again, man. I mean,
I think you will.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, to me, it looked like a man possessed. There was just no way. Like I said earlier, there was no way. There was like no go home in you. How much deep did you get into this fight? I mean, do you even remember the fight? I mean, because I've seen fighters get into a fight like that, and then later they're like, I don't even really remember what happened because I was just that far into the zone.
You know what? Going into the fight, I could easily say I was the most focused that I've ever been. And at the same time, I felt weird because it was actually the most relaxed I've ever been. I've never been this relaxed before a fight, you know, and going into the fight, you know, I think the preparation played a big part of it because I knew I was ready. And I was more focused on what I can do.
Right.
In this stage than what Victor can do, because we know what Victor can do. You know, we knew he has power and he is strong. So you know, it was more of what I can do at this stage than what Victor could do.
Now, after hearing, you know, we just had Orlando, which is the manager of Victor Ortiz, on with us, and he gave us the extent of what was going on with Victor and his injuries. And I was just mentioning this a little while ago. I'm like, this is crazy. A lot of folks really kind of said, you know, he's feather-fisted. He's not going to be able to do, you know, damage to Victor. He's not going to be able to hold him off. Do you got to kind of toot your own horn and go, well, yeah, for a guy that doesn't hit very hard, I broke a guy's jaw in two different spots. What do you have to say now?
You know what? A lot of people might even say, hey, yeah, I just got a lucky punch. But you know, I'm just glad you know, everything went well. Everything's good. You know, I'm not the fastest puncher. I'm not the strongest fighter, and I'm definitely not the best fighter out there. But you know, put me in the ring, and I'm gonna give anybody a fight. You know, I'm a fighter, so I'm gonna be in an exciting fight anytime.
Amen to that, brother. You know what? Absolutely. You are a fighter. You know, I mean, it's like that coin. You flip it no matter what. You know, the magic coin. There's going to be heads and heads. That's the way you are. Warrior, warrior. No doubt about it. We're always going to get our money worth with you. Go ahead, Gabriel.
How much did it piss you off that they announced the Canelo fight? Was that fuel in there? Would you ever think about that?
You know what? It bothered me. It bothered me. I can't lie that it bothered me. But you know, just like I said, it just added a little bit more motivation. But the motivation itself was already there. I couldn't possibly be any more motivated. But now I just wanted to go in there and ruin some plans, just to make my victory that much better.
That's like when Rockman knocked out Lennox Lewis. And the first thing he yelled was like, "No Lennox Tyson." You know, it's one of those moments. I'm curious too. You know, like they've kind of asked you this. You know, those moments you get rocked and you just keep coming back, was it just round by round? Because your face, you were taking damage in there. It was a race to me between Ortiz's mind, and I didn't know his jaw was broke, and your face stopping the fight. Were you ever aware of that, or was it just you were on a kamikaze mission, I'm getting this done?
You know what? Unfortunately for me, yeah, you know, my face does get marked up quite easily, and well, he did land big shots and big punches, and I did get a hit quite a bit, but I think the look of my face was worse than it actually was. At no point in the fight was I ever in really big danger. He definitely did connect some good punches that definitely got my attention, you know, I'd have to be on the defensive side, but as soon as I can compose myself, I got to fire back because, I mean, that's the only way I'm going to stop Victor Ortiz because I'd have to fire back and have him feel the punches of my own.
In retrospect, you know, you really showed what sacrifice in this was. And I thought you set a tone that just said, I need to have it tonight, and it's going to be a knockout. Like, that's just the way it's going. Do you look back to that Jesse Vargas fight and go, you now understand what it was, that extra thing that you needed to give in order to get a victory?
Yes, of course. I've learned from every loss that I've had. That's the only way you can go back and get better. And I feel that every fight, win or lose, I'm getting better. And you know, and from the Jesse Vargas fight, I definitely you know, let the foot off the gas in the last few rounds, and you know, and I lost momentum, and I think that played a big role. And I think, you know, I knew going into that fight, I had to win easily 8 rounds out of the 10 to pull off a decision. So, you know, going in there, to this training camp, I trained a lot harder because there was no way I was gonna let this opportunity this big go to waste.
Yeah,
you've had. And this is my last thing, really. I'll pass over to Dave. You've had 3 close losses, like decision losses, and 4 really. I mean, going all the way back to, you know, you got your 3rd fight. When you go through a tough extended fight like that, and you go the distance and you lose a close one, versus taking a lot of damage and winning, what's the healing process like? Is it the same for each one, or is it easier to heal knowing that you won and your future is very bright?
Oh, you know what? Every loss, I mean, mine have been pretty close, but no matter what it is, it's tough mentally on you, man. It's really tough. It really makes you sit down and really think about your future. Like, man, you know, like, really? You know, unfortunately, in this sport of boxing, without having that zero in front, there's not many options you have out there. You don't have, you know, you won't be on the A side. You know, so it's tough, you know, and to still try to get back and do it again, you know. It's hard. But, you know, luckily I've had the right group of people behind me. I have a good family that supports and a good training team. And, you know, that do believe in me. So That's all really all you need, just a few group of people that believe in you and that can help you up and get you to that next level.
You know, anytime you get a big win, especially a big win like this where you come in as the underdog and or the guy that it's not, he's not supposed to crash the party, your alignment of now other fights that are available out there should open up for you. Let me ask you this, because you're obviously the guy that Golden Boy was looking at to just to be a marginal tune-up for Victor Ortiz to lead into those sweepstakes that Canelo, that everybody's after with Canelo, and you put a stop to that, beating Victor Ortiz, upsetting Victor Ortiz. Let me ask you honestly, Josecito, do you think you ruined the relationship with yourself and Golden Boy of getting a shot at any other Golden Boy fighters just because you're not a game player with them? You're not willing to play ball the way they want to play ball?
You know, that's funny. I really don't know. Of course, I was supposed to go in there and it was supposed to be just a victory for Ortiz. I know the plan. I know
right.
Their plan, at least. It definitely wasn't my plan. Maybe I can get a little bit more respect now and know that if I'm in a fight, it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a fight either way. So I'm not worried about that. I think I have the right people behind me and good opportunities to come. And I think if we play our cards right, our future is looking great.
Do you stay at 147 or do you go back to 140? I mean, because there's some good fights at 140 still for you. I mean, you got Danny Garcia going to be facing Amir Khan. I would love to see you get a shot at either one of those guys, you know. There's a guy in your stable camp, Mauricio Herrera, that doesn't have a dance partner anymore with Brandon Rios. That's another great fight. Or do you stay at 147 and wait for the outcome? I mean, another Golden Boy fighter that's dabbling at 147 is in July 28th is Robert Guerrero. Is there a possibility that you might be able to, you know, rub shoulders with Golden Boy again and say, hey, I'm the underdog, you know, I'm not supposed to hit so hard, but give me a shot?
You know what? There's definitely a lot of good fighters out there in the 40 and 47 division, you know, and there's definitely fights to be made. We felt pretty good going into this weight division. I understand I'm not a full welterweight. And, you know, I'm more comfortable like at the 43, 44 pound division. But I mean, not division, 344. But we can easily still make 140. So I think we're definitely going to explore our options and make the right choices. And whether it's 40 or 47. One, it doesn't matter. I think there's definitely fights to be made, and I'd be excited to fight anybody that's worthy.
You know, it's fair to say that you didn't just win money, you didn't just win a fight, you won options in this. Like, you can go 40, 47, you got Matisse, Maidana is around, you know, Bradley's probably going to be looking for somebody to fight, and they'll probably want to put him in with a Mexican that comes to him to make him exciting. The sky's kind of the limit right now, huh?
Exactly. I mean, I've always dreamed of being in this position. Tables have turned. I have a voice. I'm not just an opponent, you know? So I feel that going into a fight, I'm that much more confident, that much better preparation. Everything's going good besides the, you know, the little chunk of change that I got for this fight. Now tables have turned, and I'm in the front seat of the driver's seat. So, you know, that's great. That's great to have options, you know, and something that I never really had before. So having an option, man, that it's the best feeling.
Man, we've had you on. I don't know. I think it's like our third year we've had you on with us here on Leaving the Ring, and it's not even, I don't even know how to describe it, to see a guy that we've put on the radio show and we've spoken to that finally finally meets that road that you guys dedicate yourself to and work so hard to get at, because, you know, it's enlightening. You know, with all the darkness that's with boxing, that little bit of, you know, that little pinhole of light is what, as a fan, is what we love. You know, we love to see guys like yourself overcome the obstacles of the naysayers, that the guy that's not supposed to punch hard actually punches like a jackhammer to knock down those walls, those barriers that say no, you cannot do. So congratulations, brother. I can't wait to see you get in the ring again. And like I said, a warrior, I don't even know if that's the right definition to put on your back right now, because you know, the way you've been going about with your career, It there's got to be another name out there to describe the way you've been hustling and bustling in the ring.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate the words, man. It means a lot. You know, it's a tough road, you know, coming up, and not just myself, but a lot of fighters go through this. So, you know, it's just sticking through it, man. And, you know, there's got to be one thing on your mind, and that's to get to the next level. And, you know, sooner or later, if you work hard enough for it, it'll get there.
Absolutely.
Did you feel like you leveled up, like the video game? You're like your fight game is now on another level.
You know what? I think my confidence in myself has never been the best, fighting wise. I think my confidence level of knowing that hey, you know what? Maybe I am as good as people think. You know, but I still have a lot more room for improvement, man. It's still a sport that I definitely want to get better at, and I really want to be good. You know, not just show heart and balls in the ring. I want to be a really good fighter, so I'm definitely going to work to try and get better.
Stop getting hit so much, you know. But then you can be so, you won't be maybe as exciting though. I think that's kind of the trade-off, right? Is you like to get in there and get it done, and the byproduct of that is you're going to get hit a lot. Or you just improve and you keep – I guess there's always room for improvement. Bernard Hopkins fights on the inside. He doesn't get hit a whole hell of a lot. Where do you go from here? What would you like to do? Take a rest? Go a big fight? Something more of a showcase? If you just had, like, the perfect fight.
You know what? I think I'm definitely going to need a couple weeks off, but – I definitely like to get in there pretty soon, you know, maybe October or so. But I'm gonna sit down with my promoters and see where we can go from here. You know, I think hopefully we're able to have some options and make the right choices. That's it. And they already know that when I get in the ring, I do my job. So as long as we all make the right moves, we'll be all right.
Cool. Yep. I like what you're saying, man. Josecito Lopez here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, brother, again, thank you. Very humbled with your win. Like I said, I picked against you. I should have went with my heart the first time. Shame on me, but not shame on you, man.
Yeah,
you came through.
Thanks, guys, man. I appreciate everything. Nice being on again.
Hey, all right, brother.
Pleasure,
you
man.
Take
Good
care.
Good luck to you, and get some rest. Take care.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Well, there you go. Josecito Lopez here on Leaving the Ring. Real humble kid, you know, and great story. Great story that comes along with him. And, you know, we especially right now, which, you know, boxing is a roller coaster, man. I mean, you know, I went to Magic Mountain and took the kids out there, and those roller coasters don't match what goes on in the world of boxing. You know, it's up and down, turns and twists, is upside down. But it's those moments where you raise your hands up in the air and you can feel the wind just going through your hair, and the scream, that grita that you throw out when you're like, you feel like, ah, that's it. You see it with a Josecito Lopez getting a victory over a guy like Victor Ortiz, you know. And I really got to applaud Victor Ortiz as well, because like I said, our question, my question was of Victor's mentality. And, you know, when I seen him, you know, say my jaw was broken. I mean, his mouth was hanging out. There was no doubt in my mind this kid was injured. And it's easy for us to say, ah, this guy quit again, or blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, man, when you're injured, And this was a visible injury. This wasn't something that we had to guess and ask for medical records. You could see the blood was just coming. It was gushing out. It was not even, it wasn't, you know, dripping out. It was streaming out of his mouth. So the injury was live. It was there. And that's when you have to be compassionate.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. You know when something's really wrong with your body. You just do. Like you said, everybody's got their threshold. And maybe, you know, Arthur Abraham, I remember that fight. I mean, he was bleeding like that. I'm sure there was a similar issue going on in there. His jaw was just, you know, in shattered two places. But, you know, Victor made a decision to not go on. And you know, now I realize it's just the right one. And to me, it isn't even like before I was saying, well, he made a decision between, like, degrees of greatness. You know, the great ones go on, the superhuman tough go on. But he might have died. You know, he might have bled out fighting, the adrenaline, you know, the blood pumping fast. We might have had a tragedy. Instead, the guy knew his body, and he made a decision. And we can fault him for that and say, you know, he's not Ali or whatever. But, you know, everybody's got their own threshold, and everybody knows their own body. And this is, it's a life and death game. So I just don't blame him. It's pretty illuminating hearing that from Rolando.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then I know a lot of folks right now are already talking about rematch. What do we see happen in a rematch? Let me tell you this. This is the interesting part about the rematch here is that the first time around with Josito Lopez going into this match, we question, can this guy take a big punch? Is he going to be able to have enough power to hold off of Victor Ortiz, who's been in that division in two prior fights in that? And that was lingering around. Now the question is, was that the best of Lopez? Was that the more focused of Lopez has ever been? He said it here on Leave the Ring, yes. It's more focused, the most I've ever been focused in a fight. Does he go in not bringing that same enthusiasm, the intensity that he brought this first time around? Victor Ortiz coming in this fight. Now we all got to sit back and wonder about the jaw, the mindset. Again, the mindset. That's what makes this a rematch. If it was to come down to it and happen again, that's what makes the fight, again, very interesting. Great lineup, great setup for another story to lead into a rematch. Are we going to have gunfight again? Man, we only hope. But sometimes the rematches don't really hold up to the first one, you know. I don't know if you want to add anything to that there.
I think it's too early to tell, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, Victor got his jaw broke in two places. He's got, like, titanium plate screws in there. I'm just prepping right now for our next guest. I just think it's too early to tell. I think Lopez has got a lot of options. I think he busted his jaw in two places, and he gets to kind of pick what he gets to do next. You know, obviously, he's not going to move up to 154. That's why I think it was silly to ever consider that with Ortiz and Canelo. It wasn't like the winner of this fight was going to get Canelo. So it kind of made this seem like some sort of, you know, if they'd gone to the cards and Victor won by a landslide, but it was that kind of fight that we saw, what would we have thought? And the guy would have his jaw broken two places, so they'd still be ass out of an opponent. But it just seems to me that Josito, as he said, he's got options. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. Ortiz has got 6 months of pure rehab to think about what he wants to do with his career. He's made millions. He's a young guy. He likes to travel. He's a curious mind. He may decide to retire. I'm not even thinking about a rematch at this point. Josito will fight before that if he's smart.
You know,
his options will change further.
I honestly, not thinking about a rematch, I actually would like to see what Josito is going to do next, just because the fact is that I wouldn't want to see him get stuck with just the Ortiz fight that ends up being the only fight that is optional for him. Right now, to me, he opened the doors wide. There's a field full of fighters out there that he can walk through and pick to face against. The only thing that's going to be against him is the signing or the nod of other promoters that are going to want and be willing to match their fighter with Josito Lopez. Just because now you saw the determination. Now you saw the Rocky Riverside out of the guy, you know. So
right,
there are things out there that obviously Josito Lopez can get a hold of and can handle and make into great fights that are available. But it's not the fighters that are questioning. It's the players behind the switchboard are the ones that are going to have to make that final decision. Let's pass in some fight fans really quick. We got our next scheduled guest in about 15 more minutes, and we're going to continue talking boxing. But let's get some fight fans that want to talk here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. You can call in 347-215-7598. Also got some good news, man. We're going to be broadcasting live on July 24th in Folsom, California. I'll give out the details and of where you can go out, and there's going to be some it's going to be a charity event and stuff. So I'll send that out right now. I'll talk a little bit about it. But let's some fight fans that want to talk here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with CT. What's up, brother? You want to talk Ortiz and Lopez here on Leaving the Ring? What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say, I wonder when these promoters are going to, you know, stop doing this. I mean, I'm thinking when they're going to learn their lesson. I mean, I got a list of fights that I have here that I remember that this happened to before. I'm pretty sure you guys remember these fights, too. Remember the Tommy Morrison versus Michael Bent fight when Morrison was scheduled to fight Lennox Lewis and he got
yeah.
knocked out?
Yeah.
I remember the Zahir Rahim fight when he fought Morales, and he beat Morales. He upset Morales when Morales
yep.
was supposed to fight Pacquiao. The Delahoya and Stern fight.
Yep.
Even though Delahoya
yeah.
won, you know, it gives these fighters extra motivation. Actually, it happened in the Whitaker and Bellator title fight when Whitaker was supposed to fight Delahoya. When he scheduled to fight Delahoya, and Hurtado knocked him down a couple of times. You know, when Moses was supposed to fight Trinidad, and Winky Wright upset those plans. And then it happened with this fight. I mean, it happens in the, you know, I wonder when the promoter is going to stop making this mistake and just, you know, bypassing the challenger.
I don't think that's the answer. I think we have to be happy with the chaotic nature of the sport. I mean, that's, these guys, what we want is a fair fight between two guys who give their all and a clear outcome. That would probably be like what everybody would want out of a great fight. You know, that's very rare to get that. I think this was a great fight, and that it had a very clear, it was evenly matched. We had an underdog, but, you know, the intangibles outweighed the odds. I don't think we can complain about that. In the old times, these guys fought all the time, and shit like this happened all the time, and it was fine.
Right.
I think we can get away from penalizing a guy for a loss, and guys saying, oh, I don't want to see Victor Ortiz again. Why wouldn't you? He's always in exciting fights. I mean, even if he goes crazy and headbutts people and kisses them and gets knocked out, it's still exciting. It's still great theater. So, I don't know. You know, I think, like, look at the flip side. Bradley Alexander, we did exactly that. They didn't fight for, like, almost a year between them. And when we got to the fight, they were both stale and flat and not very sharp at all. It wasn't a very good fight. It was kind of an ugly fight. And it wasn't certainly a super fight that we were all expecting. It actually kind of was very fitting that it was in the Silverdome, kind of a decrepit thing of a venue, because the fight resembled that. Just was undercooked and not very well thought out. So
yeah.
I disagree. I think they should have more activity. But, I mean, shit like this happens. I think the matchmaking, though, Zahir Rahim with Morales, horrible matchmaking. Why would
yeah.
they do that? Sturm, too. They just didn't do their homework. They looked at, instead of 15 knockouts, Oscar didn't train very well, from what I'm told. And look at his body. It's pretty obvious he didn't. You know, Lopez, I think Ortiz was ready mentally.
I think he was physically and mentally he was ready for Jose Cito.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the victory just more sweeter. Where when you mention, like, Stern and you mention, when you mention, you know, Delahoya and you mention Eric Morales, when they had their supposed tune-up fight before leading into their big matches, you could kind of see that they weren't mentally ready, you know, that they actually took it as this is just a broadcast sparring. And we saw the outcome of it, you know, where Ortiz, we didn't see a guy that overlooked Lopez, you know. I think, if anything, he was the guy that really gave him more of his credit due than anybody else out there that was giving, respect to Lopez, you know, because to me, he came out there, you know, ready, prepared, and like I said, it wasn't like he was giving his victory over to Lopez. Lopez had to fight for that victory, man, and that's why I think the most right now for Ortiz is the fact that the kid came to fight and he lost. He went out on his shield.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, both fighters, I love the fight itself. It was definitely, I knew it was going to be that type of fight, you know, a brawl back and forth. But the determination I seen, and, you know, it was almost how Ortiz looked against Berto, you know what I mean? Lopez wasn't taking no for an answer that night. You know, he hit back. He took some hard shots, which, you know, Ortiz had some pop, and Lopez took those shots. You know, he stumbled at times, but he was just so determined that night. You know, like I said, he wasn't taking no for an answer. As far as I just want to talk about the Canelo fight, I would love to see him fight, if he could, fight Carlos Molina. I want to see that fight. Either Carlos Molina, I think he makes everybody look bad. You know what I mean? Nobody's ever looked really good against him. And I think he'll be a test for Alvarez. Another opponent I would see Alvarez against is Erislein de Laura. I would love to see them fight if Laura gets past Hernandez this weekend, which he should.
Yeah.
He should.
He should.
Anything can happen.
Yeah.
Old, you know.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's boxing, for crying out loud, you know. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold really quick, brother, okay? Thanks for the call. Don't hang up. We're definitely going to touch a little bit about the sweepstakes that is Canelo, and a lot of these fighters are looking forward to getting in the ring with him. You got a lot of credible names out there, you know, Austin Trout, Erislein Lara. You definitely like Carlos the King Molina. Those are definitely fighters that I think are durable, and they have a winning chance against Saul Canelo Alvarez. But I want to touch on the undercard really quick with you know, the Ortiz and Lopez fight. We were talking about Matisse's versus Soto, and before I can get into that whole analogy about what I was seeing, is that I thought it was kind of weird to see that Soto had on his trunk, you know, which he was promoting, I believe it was a concrete company. And to me, it was like watching a rotor hammer go up against a jackhammer, you know. And little by little, Soto was using his boxing skills, but it was like chipping where Matisse was more, those big punches, those wailing punches were taking chunks. And I thought if it was any other fighter, Gabe, I don't know what your thought was about, but I thought if it was any other fighter that Soto was facing, you know, Ante Leon, the amount of punches, the accuracy, and being precise, it would have stopped anybody. It would have discouraged him. But he had a big guy, and he had a guy that knew the only way that he can get in was to pick some shots with his face, but a lot of them were picked with his gloves. I thought that not a lot of people are giving him the credit that, you know, Matisse is a lot better boxer than Madonna, Marcos Chino Madonna. And he was picking those shots, and his eyes really were fixed on the body, but he mixed it up. You know, when he saw Soto get hurt to that body, he was smart enough to be, you know what, I need to go to the head now. And that's exactly what he did. After that drop, after that fifth round, when Soto said, I'm done, I thought it was a perfect moment for him to realize and to say, you know what, I'm just outgunned with this. This guy's too big. I've thrown perfect combinations. I've landed. I've done enough. I can't hold back this big kid. You know, I can't keep him off of me. And it's just going to get uglier and uglier and uglier.
It was Matisse's got a little bit of a ring IQ going on. He gets a little bit better each fight. He moves forward intelligently. He uses his jab. He works the body. He doesn't forget to use the body work. He's just a very nice fighter, man. He's kind of like a polished, almost like a Gennady Golovkin type. He's a seek and destroyer. You know, I like Soto. I've watched him for a long, long time. I really enjoy his work. He's got beautiful technique, crisp combinations. He knows when to come back with a hook or come back with that straight right, get back to the jab. He's got great distance and all that, you know, ability to use his footwork to keep the proper range. But again, just like Josito Lopez, Matisse set a range and a pace that just spelled knockout. Like, I'm going to keep coming after you. I can handle your power. I didn't really feel like he was rocked at all, Matisse. He just kept coming. Even though he was eating plus shots, he was the bigger man, the stronger man, the more natural 140-pounder. And I don't know about how you feel about it, but it's kind of the division is there for Matisse's taking, in my opinion. If Golden Boy really gets behind him, this is the guy that you could take back to Argentina He can do fights in between, build up his following down there, come back up here, do an HBO date. I think they should keep him very busy and keep him very sharp.
That's the key thing.
That's absolutely
what I was going to say. You know, when you were talking about that, that's the first thing that popped in my head, though, is the activity. You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. He's got a boxing IQ. But in order to sharpen that IQ, in order to keep him building as a fighter and look better as a fighter, you got to keep him busy. And that's something that, you know, Golden Boy, they got a good eye, man. That's something we have to admit. They got a good eye for talent. But to me, sometimes they spread themselves a little too thin. They're just all over the place. They really need to settle down and focus on a handful of fighters and build them the right way. You know, I mean, yes, you want to take over this world domination with these guys, but sometimes in order to dominate the world, you got to dominate a small town. You got to learn how to govern a small town. You know, you start small, then you go after big. And that to me right now is the lack of what Golden Boy does. You're absolutely right. They got a gym there with Matisse. But unfortunately, to them, these guys inherited a mining field, you know, of gold, but they were never miners from the beginning.
Yeah.
So
You know, I don't like to be down on them because they gave us a really nice card. You know, I didn't see all the undercard because I wasn't there, but I saw the televised main event. I didn't see the Showtime Extreme stuff. I still have to catch up on it, but it was a good card. You know, it didn't go their way, and I like that they haven't really like trashed Josecito. They've allowed him the victory. There was no controversy. There was nothing like that. It was just it didn't go their way. You know, you don't really want to kick them when they're down. I never really agreed with the idea that they would announce that September 15th fight. I mean, why not even tease the audience a little bit and say, well, if Victor wins, he's interested in moving up, and maybe Josecito is too. Like promote it a little bit. Instead, they just announced it. I found it to be very rude.
Absolutely.
So it kind of killed their own card. In a sense, it was saying, this fight is kind of not for real.
We mentioned that last week, remember? Real quick, let's patch in a friend of ours that has called in, and we've scheduled him here on, and he's on hold right now with us here on Leaving the Ring before we call in our next guest. But let's get Jesse Vargas is on hold with us. Jesse, you there, brother?
Hey, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Doing good. Hey, congratulations with your signings with Top Rank, brother.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. How you guys doing?
We're doing good,
man. How you doing?
Congratulations on a great segment, man. I'm listening in. I've been listening in for a while now, and, you know, I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Hey, thank you.
How you liking 147? How's that feeling on you? The last time I think you were on, you were announcing that you were moving to 147. Now you're a couple fights into it. How's it feel?
It feels good. I'm growing into it. You know, I'm not a natural 147 fighter, but I'm growing into it, and I'm feeling good. You know, I've been going against some, you know, Tyner with my first fight at 47, who was a natural 47 pounder, and I think I did well. I was able to hold up his weight, and I feel good. And my next fight, you know, I feel that I'm going to come in even stronger because I did, in this small, short break, I did grow a little bit in weight. So, I'm coming back stronger.
Hey, let me ask you this. You know, seeing this past fight with the guy that you've been in the ring with, you know, and decided to test the waters too at 147, and you beat Josecito Lopez. I had scored that you won. How does that make you feel? And now that you're not with, you know, Mayweather, and you're not messing around with Golden Boy, you're with Top Rank, is that a fight that you're interested in redoing again with Josecito Lopez with his victory?
Well, first of all, speaking of Josecito Lopez, I want to congratulate him, first of all, in a great victory. And, you know, I think a rematch, you know, I think it's something fun that we both would accept, you know. But, you know, I have a different promoter now, and so now I guess we would have to leave it to our promoters. But I guess I think we would both like a rematch because, I mean, I think we both enjoy great, tough fights, you know, and then for us to give to the fans. But, you know, it's something that we just have to wait and see.
Do you feel like it's something, okay, we did it, but now we need something more of an incentive, meaning that there's got to be a little bit more at stake because you guys went out there, and it was a great fight. It was a really good fight. It was a competitive fight, but you did the competency already. Now there's got to be a little bit of funding behind it in order to have that rematch. Is that how you feel?
I think that a lot of people still want to see the rematch. You know, it was a very entertaining fight. I think we both grew as fighters in this short break that we had between our last fight. And you know, I definitely think it'll be entertaining. I mean, we both. He's a great fighter. He's a nice guy. I think he grew as a fighter. I grew as a fighter, and that's, I think it'll be another entertaining fight. And if it were ever happen.
Have they discussed with you when you're going to go, you know, when they plan on debuting you?
We hope to come back in September. You know, we're actually still negotiating the date, but September will be the month.
And that'll be on the Chavez-Martinez card, probably?
We hope so. We hope so, yes.
You know, when everybody talks about everybody loves Josecito Lopez and how humble he is, I got to say, too, with you, Jesse, I mean – there's, how could we not like you? You know what I mean? You know, humble kid. Come on, and you congratulate Josecito Lopez. We can only wish you the best. The only thing that sucks is that when you fight a fighter, and we have to make a pick. You know, that's the only thing that makes it kind of hard. It makes our job kind of difficult, man.
It's all right, man. You know, at the end of the day, we're here to entertain you guys. You know, everyone, and pick one or the other. But you know, watch the fight and. The thing is, the point is to enjoy the fight. It doesn't matter who you're going for.
Absolutely. Let me ask you the breakup. I mean, was it really a breakup with the Mayweather promotion or the team? What came down to it? Why did you decide to go to Top Rank? And because I mean, I think a lot of folks thought that the signing was going to go in the favor of Golden Boy.
Well, you know, it's I mean, nothing really broke off bad, you know, and we left on good terms, and I was negotiating with Floyd, but at the end of the day, Top Rank offered me, you know, promising some good things, and gave me a good deal, you know, so that's why I went with Top Rank, and the great company, and I'm happy to be a part of the Top Rank.
Was part of your deal as you exited that you still got to use the phrase at the end of the day, the way Floyd does?
You know, that wasn't part of it. I guess that just stuck. Yeah.
Messing with you. I find myself saying it. He says it so many times that if you're around him enough, like you start saying it. It's like the
you know, maybe it stuck, man.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Some of the fighting stuff, too, though. I mean, you got a hell of an education fighting, working in that gym, I imagine. And where are you going to be moving off to now? Are you at the Top Rank gym? So now you're going to be exposed to a whole other you've got a whole other like library of talent to choose from now. You're going to have a nice, well-rounded education coming out of this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. There's not really many fighters training there, but, you know, we do get some champions that do stop by and train there, such as Chavez a couple of weeks before the fight. And so I guess I'll see a couple of champions before they fight.
Hmm. Who's the trainer now?
Same trainer, Robert Alvisor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can only wish you the best, brother. I'm gonna I gotta put you on hold because we gotta get our guest in.
Sounds good, man. Nice talking to you guys. All right.
Hey, man. Thanks for it's always appreciated when you call in, brother. Always.
Oh, no problem.
All right.
Yeah, anytime. All right, man.
All right, bye.
Prospect Walter, welterweight prospect Jesse Vargas just gave us a surprise call, congratulating Josecito Lopez. Real humble kid. I really like Jesse, man. I only want to wish him the best and seeing him move forward in his career. I'm looking forward to see you know more of his fights. Now that he's with Top Rank, you know he's going to be built correctly. There's going to be some right moves for him. But man, my mind just went blank right now here, Gable. Who are we calling in?
Wow, Joe DeGuardia, the head of the boxing promoters.
Joe DeGuardia of the boxing.
Hello.
Yes, can we please speak to Joe?
Yeah, Joe speaking.
Hey, Joe, this is Dave Duenas with my partner, Gabriel Montoya. You're live with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hello, guy. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I'm gonna turn it over first to my partner here with the questions, and then I'll follow right behind him. Go ahead, Gabriel. Gabriel. Oh, I'm sorry. I put him on mute by accident, Joe. Go ahead, Gabriel. Go ask your questions.
Oh, hi. How are you, Joe? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things I just kind of wanted to begin with, I mean, most people, maybe you haven't been on the show before. I wanted to give a little bit of an introduction, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You're the founder and CEO of Starboxing out of the Bronx, New York. You promoted fighters like Lou Del Valle and Antonio Tarver. You promoted Tarver and Hopkins. You're the head of the Boxing Promoters Association. You're a former New York Golden Gloves champion, and you also work for the district attorney's office out there, and you have your own law offices. Does that cover everything?
That pretty much covers a lot of it.
We did our homework, Joe. We did our homework.
Now, recently you came out with a statement I thought was pretty fantastic. After the Pacquiao-Bradley, you issued a statement from the Boxing Promoters Association as their president, just kind of demanding reform across the board. How has that been received by your peers?
No, it's been received excellent. I tell you that, you know, it's a good, fresh, and rewarding to see that, you know, that when there are issues that affect everybody and issues that, you know, really are for the greater good of the sport, it's good to see that other promoters are rallying behind it and in support of it. And it's not just promoters, by the way. It's, you know, the entire industry.
You want to go, Dave, or shall I?
Well, I wanted to just to have a follow-up. Now, you know, Joe, when you see guys that are accepting this and they're going like, okay, I'm all for this, actions obviously speak louder than words. How many of them have followed up, though, with you? I mean, you know, first conversation, have any of them received a second or third conversation, or have they continued to reach out to you to hopefully pursue what the idea of trying to clean up this judging in boxing?
Well, look, I mean, there's been a lot of follow-up. There's been a lot of many, many different conversations with other promoters, with commissions and everything else. And really, you know, the goal is to be able to keep the ball rolling, to be able to, you know, keep the momentum going. And frankly, you know, that entails everybody getting involved. It entails the media staying on top of it. It entails promoters staying on top of it, commissions staying on top of it. And, you know, we're going to do our best to try to make sure that that happens, because change needs to happen, reform needs to happen. Not because, look, the sport's doing okay. When you have the numbers that we've been getting with, you know, Mayweather and Pacquiao and the top end of the sport, and when you look and see that of all the athletes for 2011, two boxers led it, led everything, every other sport.
Right.
The sport's doing okay. Okay, so the fact is, though, even though we're doing okay, even though money's coming into the sport at the top levels, the important aspect is that we have to still look at the things that need to be changed. And when things like judges, and we're not getting the best judges in there for the best highest fights, we could do changes. We could do things to correct it, and that's what we need to do.
Do you think it's just too the relationships are too old? They're like I was at Pacquiao Bradley and Bob, you know, everybody is outraged, but shooting down any possibility of corruption. And Bob is saying, well, I know these judges. I've known them for, you know, 20, 30 years. Don't you think there's a problem when a promoter knows the judges that well? Do we need to kind of get fresh troops
there? Well, look, I mean, I don't think that's the issue. I think, you know, certainly when you go to an NBA game or you go to an NFL game, the owners all know who the officials are. The players know who the officials are. But those officials, you think and you expect are going to be beyond reproach, and they're going to be the most competent officials that are out there. And that's what we need to do. We just have to go out there and try to get the most competent officials. We have to go out there and do our best to help arm the commissions and arm the regulatory bodies that are picking judges to assist them in making sure that they have the resources to get the best judges, to be able to train them in the best ways, to be able to take remedial action if judges aren't performing up to their capabilities or the way they should be performing, and to take the appropriate actions if that occurs. But those are the types of things that we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at how do we help? How do we as promoters go out there and help the commissions, help the regulatory bodies be able to make the right choices on the structure of appointing officials, on the structure of training officials on the structure of coming up with an objective scoring system that's nationwide or globally for our sport. And how do we come up and give them the tools to take remedial actions when somebody does something wrong? By the way, I also believe that we have to do this on a broad scale. It can't just be based upon one state. It can't be based upon, by way of a good example, if you're having a Super Bowl in Indianapolis, you don't say we're only going to use Indiana officials. We're going to get the best because it's the Super Bowl. We need to do that in our sport as well.
I agree with that too. Let me ask you just really quick here, Joe, because this is something that we have wondered, and we actually are following up with some of the commissions, and we haven't got a response back just yet. What is the criteria for judges? How do they pick them? What do they actually need in order to become an official? You know, what is their background? Do you know any of this, or is that something that
Those things vary per state, and the appointment process varies per state, and sometimes it could be a rotational process. Sometimes it could be, a favor process, almost like a political appointment. At other times, it could be based upon who the regulatory agency believes is the best judge. But the point is that we need to take that process and say, what's the best way to have a process that ensures a process that has integrity, a process that has credibility, a process that can come up with the most competent judges. Now, we may differ upon how it is that we get that process into place, but we need to start the dialogue. We need to get together and have commissions, have promoters, have all the people that are involved in the sport lend their input to come up with basically the parameters, the outlines of how we do this. How do we pick judges? How are they going to be trained? How are they going to be monitored? Those types of things. And that's the important thing, is that we come up with that criteria, come up with an objective basis from which to do an analysis of the judges and to monitor them. And that's the idea, is to come up with something uniform throughout this country.
All the world.
I
like what you're saying. Absolutely. I love what I'm hearing from you. But give us an example of what it's going to entail. What are the plans? Has there been any plan formed to try to correct this, of picking better judges? What are some of the suggestions?
No, look, certainly there are, and certainly, a lot of it revolves around working with the commissions and the regulatory agencies to be able to pinpoint the criteria on how a judge scores a fight. And, states may differ upon what it is that a judge is looking for. But wherever you are, whenever you have a fight, it should be that all the participants knows what the judge is going to be looking for. Is he going to be looking for effective aggressiveness as number one, or is he going to be looking for punching as number one, or the amount of punches as number one, or the effectiveness of those punches, or the damage that it does? The fact is that we should be able to have the ability to give the fighters the knowledge of what the judges are going to be looking for. That should be number one. And even if it differs from state to state, when you're fighting in a state, they should be able to give that to you.
Do you give them past tapes of fights so let's say I want to be a judge, and I walk in and I go, look, I know Joe and et cetera, do you sit me down, do you give me past tapes, and then allow me to judge it, and then you go off of to see whether or not, if I am a guy that has an eye to see the particulars in a fight, is that the way of, would that be the proper way, the proper channel of being a judge?
Yeah, look, certain states right now, they'll evaluate judges, they'll monitor them, they'll see them maybe come up through the amateur ranks, put them in a fight, or let them judge his fight as a monitor type of judge, where they just they're basically a judge in training. They score the fights and they see how they compare to the other judges' scorecards. It's not as if they're not trying. It's not as if the commissions are not trying. It's not as if the regulatory agencies don't do things to try to ensure that they get good judges. And that takes place. And the fact is that promoters, we all want to have, for the most part, you want to have judges that are reliable and have integrity and credibility, because the business can't flourish if the public doesn't understand that these people are going to be credible and that they're going to be good judges. It's no good for the business, and when it's no good for the business, nobody makes money. So the reality is that it's important for us to all do the things that we need to do to give the public that kind of confidence. And there are many things that, as promoters, we can do to help the commissions in that process. We work in many different states, so we can be the one of the catalyst that puts these states together.
You know,
could be the catalyst that says, utilize your resources. Well, Nevada, if you have resources about judges, and New York, if you have resources about judges, let's pool it together. Let's make it collective. Let's find out. Let's know who the best are out there. Let's come up with a tiered system. Let's come up with A-rated judges, B-rated judges, C-rated judges, and the like. And you know what? If it's going to be a fight that entails, a mega fight, a pay-per-view fight like a Pacquiao fight, those judges have to come from the A pool.
Well,
and that's what we need to do.
Let me ask you this, that's a solid system.
I like that.
But hold on. Let me just ask this really quick, Joe, because something caught my ear. Well, you said that it's not good for the business. You're absolutely right, but it has been good for the business because this continues to happen. I mean, you wouldn't be drawing up a new plan of trying to get better judges and cleaning up the sport if this wasn't continuing. Obviously, this has been good business because they still keep putting up fights out there that are very questionable.
Well, no, that's not the case. I mean, look, there are – the business still takes place and boxing still flourishes because we have a sport that people want to see. The fact is that boxing is a sport that at its peak is the best sport in the world, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And that I believe, and I believe that's why people keep coming back and people are going to be there. But that doesn't mean that we're better off by having bad decisions. Frankly, when you have a bad decision, the public loses confidence in fights. I mean, people were saying they didn't want to come to fights anymore. They want to come see a fight when they see a bad decision like that. It robs the integrity of the sport. And anything that robs the integrity of the sport is going to ultimately affect the bottom line. And the idea is we have to go out there and show that this sport is credible. The public needs to know that, and the public has to feel comfortable in that. And they have to know, and the fighters, by the way, need to know that. You know, a fighter fights and trains his whole life, trains every single day, puts his heart and soul into it, puts his heart and soul every day into what he's doing. And then what happens?
Absolutely.
He goes and gets rocked. And that's a heartbreaker. That's more damaging to a guy than his pocket sometimes, because this sometimes is heart, and this is soul, and it's what you put into it. And a lot of times it's more than just money. And a guy goes into that ring, he should know he's going to get a fair shake. And it shouldn't matter whether he's fighting in Germany, whether he's fighting in New York, whether he's fighting a New York fighter and is a New York judge. It shouldn't matter. And those are the things that we need to correct, and the public has to see that we're correcting them. And frankly, we need to take steps to really correct it, not just perception, but really correct it, because it's important for our sport. And in the long run, it'll really help our sport financially, because as long as the public knows that the sport is clean, that the sport has integrity and credibility, the public's going to support it, and so will corporations and sponsors and everything else. And that means more for fighters. It means more for promoters. It means more for everybody associated in the business. And frankly, we could start doing more in the business as more money comes in.
Absolutely.
How do you think we got here? You know, we're not on network anymore, although the idea of network has changed. I mean, Main Event is on MSNBC, which is basic cable, which is basically, you know, this generation's version of network. But we're not as relevant anymore in the general consciousness. There is some, you know, bad judging. I think that's just the nature of it. It's a human error. But how do you think we got to this point where we need serious reform and we're behind on drug testing and all the things that kind of plague us? Is it just that we haven't shaken up the system? We're not like a league that can kind of shake these people out? What do you think it is?
Well, firstly, look, I mean, there's a certainly there's things that we can do to correct our industry, and certainly I believe that if we had a league, and I don't believe in a federal government league. I believe in more of a private league, the way the NFL is and Major League Baseball is, and NBA, and we can get into that in a second. But
yes, please.
Look, these things happen in other sports also. You know, we have a sport where judging oftentimes is subjective. But you have bad calls in other sports. The other day, I saw an outcry. It was in the papers in the Daily News yesterday, the New York Daily News, that the fellow who was playing against the New York Yankees was flipping out about a call that was made against him where it looked like the guy caught the ball in the stands, but he actually didn't. And the umpire, it was clear that the ball was dropped, and the umpire said, he's still out. And now, there was a real outcry, and the guy says, well, officials should be demoted the same way, you know, we get demoted if we're not doing our jobs. So, same thing happened in Major League Baseball. The same thing happened last year in that perfect game when the umpire blew the call in the perfect game. So those types of things occur and happen in other sports also. But the fact that it happens doesn't mean that we should say, okay, let's just close a blind eye and not do our best to try to correct it. In boxing, it's happened on a couple of different occasions this year. It seems to be getting a little more prevalent, frankly, or maybe it's just more exposed right now. You find out about it because it's happening in big fights. But we need to take the steps to make it better. You know, those are the types of things that I hope that we can get accomplished.
You mentioned the private league versus the federal commission. I've never been of the opinion that adding more government fixes anything. But at the same time, you know, a lot of these promoters, I'm not singling you out, I'm just kind of blanketing it, have got us into this kind of fix. I'm wondering if we don't need outside help, because leaving it to the people that kind of got us to where we're at doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. But do you think we can get like a collective bargaining agreement between, say, you know, promoters that are promoting shows at your level and then like a Top Rank and a Golden Boy to like agree?
Right now, Top Rank, Golden Boy, they're all members of the association. They all are supportive of this, you know, this attempt that we're doing right now to correct the sport. And those are things that, I think are real positives. I don't believe in the federal government being the solution to it. I think it's a real, you know, when you look, for example, you say, well, sport hasn't corrected itself and the promoters haven't been doing it anyway. Certainly, there have been practices over the past 20, 30 years that I wish would have been different, because our sport would have been different today. But with that being said, many of the things that we're seeing today have nothing to do with promoters. For example, when you look and say, okay, well, what happened in the fight in Nevada? Well, those judges are not picked by the promoters. Those judges are picked by the regulatory agencies. And that's where the selection of the judge process takes place. So if you're going to have another regulatory agency come in, and now basically you're just going to have another one that's going to make these selections on a federal scale, maybe, not a state scale, but look, Nevada's probably one of the best commissions in the world. And yet they still didn't have the capabilities, according to many, of getting the right judges in there. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Certainly, it's a governmental agency, and they don't have the, you know, abilities that private agencies have, funding-wise. They don't have the abilities, maybe experience-wise, in that, you know, they're not throughout the country. They're basically working in Nevada only, even though Nevada's one of the best ones there is. So I think that these are things that we can go about correcting, and I'd like to see our industry go about correcting it as opposed to, you know, having the federal government come in and try to correct it, because, you know, I don't have that much confidence and faith in the fact that a governmental agency is going to be able to look out for the totality of the sport. You know, there's a lot of things you have to look at when you're running a sport. It's things like what the NFL looks at. They're looking at many different factors, including its image, including what's best for the players, what's best for the owners, what's best for the fans. And you're looking at all these things and you're weighing all of these things. And so when you have an entity that is like the NFL, which is based in and really, you know, voted in by the owners, they know that they have to keep the sport thriving, keep the sport healthy, and deal with the issues that occur because, frankly, it affects their bottom line. And that's why it's important for us to recognize that as well. And the only way I believe that we're going to be able to help fighters be able to restore that confidence with the fans and everything else is to be able to work together to try to effectuate reform that's positive for the industry. And that reform can take place right now with judges, but there's many other aspects. I mean, you know, there's medical aspects, There's, you know, pension aspects for fighters. We're the only sport that doesn't give fighters pensions. Why? It's crazy.
Right.
Okay?
It is
crazy. I mean, every other athlete, and they don't have medical insurance. They don't have, you know, a whole host of things. But there's no reason why our sport can't do that.
You know, I'm applying right now, reapplying to the Boxing Writers Association. And it's a group that's a long history, but I find them a little bit anemic in that they don't really do anything to reform the sport. And I'm looking at the Boxing Promoters Association. I'm not being rude or critical for no reason. Do you feel at this point, you guys are a young entity. You guys just decided to kind of band together. But I've seen, you know, you got the top-ranked Golden Boy Cold War. You and Boxing 360 and your company had a little bit of an issue with the Angel Hernandez thing earlier this year. A lot of little things here and there. Talk to me, what do you think? How has this gone for you, the BPA?
Well, I think it makes sense, or what do you think going forward? Whenever you have different entities, you're going to have differences of opinions, and you're going to have differing interests. And certainly that's not going to change. The same way the New York Yankees vote one way when it comes to sharing revenues from television resources or from gate resources, versus a small market, like, say, in Cleveland or Arizona, wherever else it might be. There are differing interests. And that's going to always happen. And look, that's the process by which companies operate, the process by which leagues operate. And that's always going to happen. I don't look to judge individual matters and say, well, you know, this particular one has a battle here, or this particular reporter's got an axe to grind here. The realities are is that ultimately all the different entities in this sport, whether it be commissions, whether it be promoters, whether it be managers, whether it be fighters, whether it be reporters, okay, we all have a vested interest in doing the best that we can do to make this sport better. And, you know, it's got to start someplace. And certainly it's not an easy process, and certainly there are many, many differing opinions. I mean, commissions differ with each other. They can't agree upon the most basic things from one jurisdiction to another jurisdiction. Promoters can't agree on many things, and they're battling each other at many, many times. Frankly, we have a lot of promoters, as there are in any other industry, that you might say, hey, look, you know, their business practices aren't the best, okay? Sure, it'd be great to be able to put that under one umbrella. It'd be great to be able to go to an arbitration that's an internal arbitration, so you can resolve these types of things, and we could come up with a constitution for how we should operate our businesses. Those types of things are things that hopefully you hope end up coming into place, and you hope that we can keep making that kind of progress. But the only way to make progress is to start walking. And, you know, you don't get anywhere unless you start walking. And right now we have, an issue with the judges that is something that we could start walking on. You know, certainly we've accomplished a lot in the small time as a promoters association. I certainly know there's many, many more things I'd like to see accomplished. But I'm proud of the fact that we've, you know, come up with a bunch of different, valuable things that have helped a lot of promoters, helped the business, helped the fighters. I think that the insurance program that we've put into place is fantastic. I know that it's being used by a lot of the promoters now. It's a much simplified process. It assists in getting the commissions, the information that they need, getting the venues that they need on a timely basis. Frankly, it's saved them a lot of money. So those types of things are real progresses that are being made. Obviously, there's more progress to be made, and obviously I'd like to see a lot of progress made with the judges, but there's a lot of other things that we'd like to see progress made with, but it's always one step at a time. It's, and you got to move forward and make the progress that needs to be made.
I agree with you. You know, you guys, and you're a young organization. I wasn't taking shots at you guys. I don't expect you to change the world, you know, overnight. You guys are figuring out how to be what you are, I imagine. And that's a lot of strong, I talked to a lot of you guys. That's a lot of strong personalities in one room. Do you think right now judging is the thing? We get that. We get the trust back with the fans. And not just a tiered system, but do you think maybe adding a judge or two judges? You have a guy on each side of the ring, and maybe the ref is the tiebreaker. Do you think we have to approach it in a different way? Just that it's fundamental,
look, I mean,
the way we're doing it.
I mean, there are many, many different opinions on to what we can do to correct it. I mean, there's been things even from electronics and giving them the tools of CompuBox and those types of things. There are a whole host of different, you know, differing ideas out there as to what we can do to make it better. But, you know, the real step and what I'm really looking to get accomplished, because I have my own views on how it could be made better, but really to me, that's less important than the process by us getting together to make it better. The process by which we sit down in the room and agree that we're going to take steps. And look, we might differ on what those steps are, and we might differ on what's the best way to get it done, but we're going to sit down, come up with a system, and come up with a system on how we can agree to ultimately effectuate it once we sit down and take our votes and do everything we need to do to get it into place. But that's the process that I think is you know, the important process, and that's the start the dialogue, start the actions, and basically come to the conclusion and agreement that we are in agreement that we are going to make steps to change. And so far, the commissions have agreed to work with the Promoters Association to effectuate that change.
So
and that, to me, is a huge step.
So how close – yeah, that is progress. So how close are you with the Boxing Promoters Association – and sitting down, you know, and having a meeting with the commissions or even with the rest of the promoters that have signed on and moving forward and trying to clean this up?
Well, I mean, we're closer than we were before the Pacquiao fight in the first place. I mean, I can tell you that we're closer than we were, you know, within the past few days after the fight. We've been making progress. We've agreed that we're going to get together. We've agreed we're going to keep and continue dialogue on making this process better and coming up with a system that, you know, can ultimately benefit everybody. Now, obviously, look, there's a lot of issues. I mean, the states are autonomous and they, you know, they all have their own views towards how things should be and their own desire to remain in control and in power of the things that they currently have power to decide. So that's the first hurdle.
Right.
You know, get them to agree that, you know, in, even though their state might give them the autonomy in that particular state to decide things like judges, that they recognize that the fact is that for the betterment of the sport, they need to work with us and with whatever entities need to be worked with to take the steps to make it better. And those are things that are owed to the public. Those are things that are owed to the fighters. And frankly, owe to the fans. So, you know, those are the steps that need to be made and taken. And I believe I'm pretty pleased with the fact that, you know, the commissions, you know, seem to share in that thought process. Now, does that mean that they're going to, you know, take the actions that need to be taken? Well, you know, I'm going to try to make sure that that occurs. And I, you know, I believe that they have the best interests at heart, and if they do have the best interests of the fans and the fighters and the business at heart, then they would take those steps. I mean, frankly, you know, they hold fighters up to a certain standard, and a fighter is expected to perform, a fighter is expected to train, he's expected to keep his body clean and be healthy. Okay, he's expected to perform to a certain standard, and there's no reason why a judge shouldn't be held to that same standard.
Absolutely.
That's the reality.
Absolutely. Joe, I got one more question, and we'll let you go because obviously it's late down where you're at. My last question for you is, when speaking to these commissions, and like you mentioned, you know, some of them have, you know, if they're economically, if they're doing well and they don't want to give up some of that power, what is the Boxing Promoters Association willing to give up in order to come with an agreement with them? Or is there just a merely thing like this is something just we won't negotiate? It either has to go this particular way or the state, that particular state can be left out of the movement.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, look, the idea is not to try to bully anybody into anything. The idea is to have open dialogue and work together. And, you know, I'm confident that the various states, particularly the, you know, the states that do a lot of boxing, you know, have the best interest of the fighter at heart, and they want to see the sport, you know, clean and healthy and proceed with integrity. And I got to hope that that's the way they want to be. And you got to hope that they're interested in, you know, promoting the welfare and health and safety of the fighters. And with that being said, it would be hard-pressed to find anybody that would say that they can't or don't agree that we should take the steps to get better judges. The reality is whether or not the judges are good or not good or right or wrong in their decisions. The reality is that the public has a perception that they're not issuing the right decisions.
Right.
I mean, there's no question that that's the reality, and that's
right.
the perception of the public. And we have to take the steps to change that perception in the public. And I'd be hard-pressed to say that anybody could come out and say, well, you know, you're wrong about that. I mean, the reality is that that's the way the public feels, and we need to take the steps to correct that. And, you know, certainly we have an obligation to our fans, we have an obligation to the public, but we also have an obligation to the fighters. And, you know, again, you know, these guys, you know, frankly break their ass and work their hearts out, and, you know, they should be able to know that when they get in the ring, they're going to get a fair shake. And to me, it shouldn't matter where that fight takes place. It shouldn't matter, you know, who, where, or what the judge is from. You know, you got to be able to say, I'm going to walk into that fight and know that this judge is going to score that fight the way he sees it and properly. And you know, he's going to have all the tools that he needs to do that. And that's the progress by which we want to go to the commissions to say, how do we help in
right.
giving you the tools right. you need to be able to get the best judges? And I can tell you that there are promoters in this association that have offered to put their money where their mouth is and contribute money towards that process. So, you know, I can tell you that, in my opinion, you know, there are many in this sport and industry and many amongst the promoters that, you know, will take the steps to try to ensure that we can get the best out there, because it's frankly important for the sport, it's important for the fighters, but ultimately it's important for the bottom line of the sport, and that frankly equates to money. And
wow.
You know, a lot of these things are interrelated.
You know, well, I appreciate you taking the time to explain to us exactly what you guys are going to be moving forward with. You know, and I agree with you at the same time, too, that media needs to be behind this and push hard as well in making these changes. And, you know, myself and Gabriel, you know, we try to do our best to educate as much as we can here on our radio show, Leaving the Ring. You know, we've brought Victor Conte, Margaret Goodman when it comes to the PEDs. And now we like to have you as our front guy to come on Leaving the Ring all the time to discuss these changes and the progress that is coming along. And if there's any way we can help out, we definitely wouldn't mind getting in the trenches and in the mud with you.
No, that's a good thing. And I will say that I think that, you know, in many respects, our industry needs to have all the forces working together in many different, you know, fronts. And unfortunately, we don't have that often. And many times, you know, the media might not be fully informed on a lot of things when they, you know, write about things or speak about things. And it's important to be able to keep that dialogue. It's important for the media to know what's going on, so the public can know what's going on. And oftentimes, I know you don't have that at your, you know, you don't have that accessible because, frankly, there's no centralized league, so to speak, in boxing where you can go and say, well, is this credible? Is this right?
Right.
Here's what so-and-so is saying. Is this right? Can this possibly be? And you don't have somebody you can go to and get credible information. And that's an important thing because, you know, if you don't have the credible information, it's hard to report properly. And that's why it's important for us to, you know, take the steps to make this sport better, to make it more uniform, and to be able to, you know, make sure that we can do the best that we can do to ensure that it's in a credible and a way with integrity that it's run. And hopefully we can start taking the steps towards that.
I agree with you. It would be nice to see the BWAA and the BPA start to communicate and work together and get proactive. You know, it's about that time, you know. Joe, I really appreciate you coming on the show and opening this dialogue with us. We'll keep it open if you guys do, and we'll just keep moving forward, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure.
You have a good night. You too.
You
have a good night. All right.
Bye-bye.
I liked a lot of the stuff he had to say, you know, and yeah, and definitely this is a puzzle that his organization now, the Boxing Promoters Association, you know, very small pieces that have to be put together, you know, and it's going to be difficult, but it's not impossible. We just now have to sit and see if the other promoters that are saying that they are going to be for the right officials and governing, having one government, you know, oversee and regulate these judges, are the interest really more on cleaning it, or just merely to kind of keep you at bay by making you believe that we're with you on that picket line?
Well, I think that's what he means. You know, when he says all the forces have to work together, well, it's on us, on the media, to make sure that they live up to their word and they don't just pay us lip service and we go, cool. You know, it's sort of like the, you know, test results of Mayweather Cotto. Everybody went, you know, oh, press release, cool, this is the truth. And it really isn't. We'll get into that in a bit. I got Louis DeCubis Jr. calling me right now.
And, you know, like we said before, you know, we're going to chase after the judging, and we're still trying to wait for a couple other officials to get back to us here. So, you know, we're trying to do our part. And I believe my co-host has our next guest with us. Go ahead, Gabe.
I'm back here with Louis DeCubis Jr. He's the manager of Eric Landy Lara, among other talented fighters. Welcome to the show, Lou.
Hey, thank you very much, Gabe. I appreciate it. I want to thank everyone for having me.
Hey, no problem. You explained earlier that, you know, the guy just made weight and he's going to be fighting. Didn't really want to get on the air and talk, which is completely understandable.
Yeah, well, I think it was more of just, you know, he's been bombarded. And, like, every interview we do, it's just always the same question. You know, why aren't you fighting Canelo Alvarez? You know, why isn't your promoter mentioning you? And it's just, you know, too many distractions, you know.
Right.
Just, you know, we're the day and a half before the fight. He needs to just strictly focus on Freddie Hernandez, who's a tough, rough customer. He just beat Luis Collazo, so... So, you know, we're focused on him strictly right now.
That was were you ringside for that fight? I was, and it was a surprising fight. A lot of people are kind of saying Hernandez, it's going to be a walkover, and I think Collazo probably thought that, but I don't know what got into him, but that's kind of a dangerous fight for you guys with so much on the line that you have to win. Well, why take a fight like that? Just you believe in your partner that much?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I just, you know, I think Lara's on another level than everyone else, you know, and if I think he'll knock out Canelo within six rounds, then a guy like Freddie Hernandez, he needs to beat, you know, and on top of it, he needs the rounds. Since he beat Paul Williams, you know, that we were kind of on the shelf for like the next 9 months, and then he fought Ronald Hearns, knocked him out in 90 seconds. It was important to get him right back in the ring, you know, instead of sitting around waiting for the big fight that'll probably never come, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and even that Ronald Hearns one, a lot of people are like, Hearns is done, this and that. He walked right through him, though, and those were beautiful left hands that he threw. And the way he finished, he's figured, almost like Guillermo Rigondeaux, they both figured out, okay, it's hard to sell Cubans in America. We don't have a big fan base. We don't speak English. What we do is knock people out in spectacular fashion, and we're just going to have to keep doing that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate, but I think it was more of, you know, coming off the robbery to Williams, like, shit, I hit this guy with everything but the kitchen sink, and they still robbed me, and as many times, you know, Cassius Mayor got robbed plenty of times in his career, and he's like, you know what, I'm not giving these guys opportunities to rob me, you know what, I'm going to go up there and take his head off, you know, and that's exactly what he did with Hearns. Hearns is, you know, he's a lot better than what people give him credit for, you know, he won six, seven strong rounds with Sturm, who's regarded as one of the top middleweights, and Lara blasts him in 90 seconds, so... It kind of shows, you know, that Lara's just on a different level than Sterns, the Hearns of the world, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. He kind of blew it out, you know? I mean, it was a perfect shot. It wasn't like he just tapped him with a jab and the guy went to jelly. He landed a perfect shot.
He landed a perfect shot, and he's a sharpshooter. And Lara, out of his 11 knockouts, 9 are in the first round. You know, he's a guy, if he hits you right in the first round, he's going to take you out. And his other two, one was in the fourth and one was in the 10th round when he stopped Grady Brewer. So he's the type of kid where he'll knock you out from the first round or the last round. You know, he keeps the power with him.
Talk to me a little bit about what are you going to do at this point? They've narrowed it down to two guys. It sounds like it's not you. I mean, do you kind of understand that you maybe too much for Canelo and that you guys have to build towards this? Do you work with
Canelo? Yeah, what I don't understand is that they're talking about, you know, he's ready for Floyd Mayweather. Well, if you're ready for the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, then you better be ready for the best 154-pound in the world. You know?
Right.
Because there's Landy Lara. So, I mean, if you want to jump from first base to home, that's fine by me, you know, but not at the expense of my fighter and putting my kid, you know, on these shows, you know, with a tough guy like Freddie Hernandez, which is not a great exposure show. He's the first fight on Showbox. I mean, you just don't go from beating a major league guy like Paul Williams on HBO to fighting on Showbox back-to-back on the first fight. It just doesn't make sense, you know, any which way you cut it.
when you talk about any which way you cut it, I mean, you know, Luis, as a manager, I can hear the frustration, but at the same time, when you're going into these negotiations, is this just a matter of I got to put food on the table for my fighter, or is there any way of striking and going like, no, you know what, I'm done with this, man. My fighter's doing what he's supposed to do, which is win in the ring, be impressive, be dangerous, and a lot of those things, three things that equal should equal in fighting the best.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I mean, trust me, we've gotten very close a few times, you know, going through litigations or whatnot, but I mean, look, this kid right now, you know, for him to be sit out a year, we just want to get him back in the ring. You know, I think in the next few days, I'm going to make a huge move for Lars' career, which I can't discuss now. But I guarantee you one thing: he's going to start getting the big fights, and if that's by forcing Golden Boy or not, you know, he's going to get the big fights. I guarantee you.
You got to make a move. He's starting to prime. You can't just. It would almost end up being like I remember I Corte kind of at this point, and even Felix Trinidad was kind of hitting this age. It was time to break free and really take the big fights, and he had to sue Don King. You know, Corte got sick, sat on the shelf. I never thought he was quite the same guy. You got to keep this guy busy, and you can't really afford to.
You got to keep him busy, and the thing is, he's very hot. His name's out there, and you know, the big fight's got to come. You know, I think just the media's putting so much pressure. You know, on I mean, it shouldn't have to come to this. You know, the Golden Boy's his promoter. They should be promoting his career. You know, and like I said, the big fight's going to come. You put him in front of us, we'll knock him down, and that's what we're going to keep doing.
That's the thing that I think is puzzling for everybody. And, you know, for people to ask, you know, Lara, when are you going to fight Canelo? It should be really asking you, you know what I mean? I mean, as the manager, right? I mean, you're the guy that has to, you know, put it on the paper and get these guys to agree with you.
I've been, you know, trust me, we've done everything. I've made calls, you know, even when Victor Ortiz fell out, we have offered to go down to 147 pounds to fight him. They thought we were crazy, so I guess they must think we're really crazy to fight Canelo. But Lara himself yesterday at the public workout, you know, he went up to Eric Gomez and said, Eric, let me ask you something. Can I fight Canelo Alvarez? Well, you know, what's the deal with my career? And Eric told him very simple, you know, Canelo doesn't want to fight you. He does not want to fight you. You know, and to be honest with you, an answer is better than no answer. You just stay quiet and act like the kid's an invisible. I just got off BBC in the UK, and they're calling Lara Mr. Invisible, you know? So, I mean, it's getting a little outrageous, you know?
But, you know, this is not really happening just to him as a Cuban fighter. I mean, I see a lot of Cuban fighters being avoided, man. I mean, what do you think it is that certain promoters or even fighters, like, you know, Canelo saying, I don't want to fight him. What do you think it is that they don't want – why don't they want to mix it up with them?
I mean, look, these guys got a ton of experience, and they're hungry. These kids are hungry. You're talking about guys like, you know, Lara who lived in Guantanamo where he had a, you know, plastic roof over his head, you know. I mean, you're in that hot box, it's at 150 degrees in that house, you know. And when you get out of there and you actually get these types of opportunities, you want to grasp them, you know. And for people to say, you know, that, oh, you know, they don't have fan base, they don't have this. Well, you never give them a chance to have a fan base, you know. So you really can't. You can't say that. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Lars, everywhere we go, he's noticed by Americans and Mexicans. You know, Cubans, it doesn't matter. I mean, the kid's become a popular face since he got robbed by Paul Williams. And I think people took it as more of a sad story. The kid left Cuba two times. You know, first he went to Brazil, then he got sent back. Then he had to go through shark-infested waters to be where he's at now. Left his two kids in Cuba, his mother in Cuba. You know, all he asks is to be treated by, you know, be a fair human being, you know, by his own promoter. That's all we ask, you know. And we took the Paul Williams fight, you know, because we knew we were ready. 15 fights, you know, name any other fighter that fights Paul Williams with 15 fights. We win, you know, and we're stuck in the same position. So if I knew this, you know, I might have not put the kid in with Paul Williams, you know, who's a tough customer. But you know what? He stepped up to the plate.
You know, I've spoken to a few managers, and it's even like with Robert the Ghost Guerrero's manager at the time. They were trying to get as many fights as they could possible. It sounds like
that's
go ahead.
I'm going to cut you off. I mean, that's funny you mentioned Robert. You know, I advise Robert now. Bob Santos, you're probably speaking to his manager, who's, you know, a great family friend. You have known him for years, and you know, I work with Robert. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez avoided Robert. Chris John avoided Marquez. You know, Rocky Juarez, Juan Diaz. Fight Robert, you know, and I think Robert's really started coming to his own.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I was going to say was that it sounds to me that Golden Boy is more and more getting more unsatisfied managers and surrounding them. I mean, is it fair to blame them, or is it more fair to just to blame the other fighters that they obviously have more of an economical interest in?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, look, they make in-house fights all the time. You know, Danny Garcia is fighting Amir Khan. Madonna fought Alexander. Now he's fighting Keith Thurman. You know, so, I mean, look, you guys make in-house fights. You're first fighting. I mean, I could go and on of the guys they put in-house. You know, and for some reason, Laura has to go outside and then fight another guy's promoter. Well, if you guys won't put him in with nobody, would you think any other promoter's going to put him in with anybody? I mean, it's just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
You guys have Laura, or you guys have Rigondeau as well. Am I correct?
Yeah, my father works for Rigondeau. He's promotion. He's managed by Gary Hyde, who's an Irishman, and I don't have nothing to do with Rigondeau. You know, I just you know, a good friend and supporter.
I was bummed the day you left the wild card just because I had access to be able to watch you guys train.
it's unbelievable.
It's mesmerizing in the gym, you know? Have you ever seen anybody that talented, like that up close? I mean, Laura's a badass, no question. But
I think, to be honest with you, I mean, Rigondeau's, you know, off the charts. I mean, to be honest with you, no one, other than Kasim, obviously, but no other Cuban has beaten a Paul Williams type fighter. And not to take nothing away from Rigondeau, which I think if you were to get the opportunity to fight Nonino Donaire or Abner Mars, you'll destroy him. And Abner Mars is a lot easier than Donaire. But I mean, he's not getting that opportunity. But the reality is, you know, I think Laura is a guy that he can, you know, he'll come forward, he'll fight you backwards. You know, he's got great defense. He can punch. You know, he's got a great chin. You know, I think he's a complete whole package. You know, and I think there's gonna be one person that surpasses Cassius Mayor. I really feel Laura's gonna be the guy. You know.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, he's got that kind of talent. I love me a southpaw with power, but he minds his defense, but he wants to knock you out. He's got the whole package. Should
he go after Carlos Molina again? Let me ask you that really quick.
Yeah, that's the fight he's dying. To be honest with you, I mean, obviously money wise, Canelo makes more sense. But if you give him the pick, let's say if they're fighting for free, he'll fight Carlos Molina any day over Canelo Alvarez because he's dying to, you know, close people's mouths and people say that he lost or it was a close fight or this and that. I mean, trust me. I mean, Laura. Look, there's no excuses. We know he wasn't 100%. If he was 100%, I really think he probably stops part of Molina, if not beats him every single round, dominates him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that fight. I think, yeah, he would be able to, with his experience, he'd be able to handle all those kind of weird tactics of Molina, the grabbing, the kind of veteran tricks, if you will. Laura would be able to
But people got to remember that when Laura fought Molina, he was the hottest prospect in boxing. He was coming off four first-round knockouts. Everyone thought he was a god. And now you fight a guy, and it's actually a tough fight. You know, people were starting to doubt him. And in close rounds, you know, Laura shouldn't have no close rounds. Well, you know what? No one's god, you know. And Molina went to show on beating Kermit Cintron, beat the shit out of Cintron. Then he goes and beats the shit out of Kirkland for the next 11 rounds and gets robbed very, very bad. You know, it shows that Molina's a damn good fighter himself. But I really think Laura's on another level, you know?
I think he would this time around, he would be able to deal with everything that troubled him in that first fight.
Oh, no doubt. And look, I mean, Gabe, you're in the gyms all the time. You know, a fighter, you know, boxing, you start knocking guys out in one round, and boxing becomes easy. We're talking about guys like Willie Lee, who went 10 rounds with Sakul Powell. He went 6 rounds, I believe, with Von Ismatoroshin. You're talking about, you know, guys like Delray Raines who went, you know, 7-8 rounds with a lot of guys, and he knocks him out in one round. Boxing becomes a little easy, you know, and you think it's all going to be easy. You know, you get a little overconfident. It happens to the best of them, you know, and to be honest with you, I had him winning the fight against Molina. I mean, it could be bias. I'm his manager. Worst comes to worst, it's a draw. But don't say the kid got robbed. Don't say it was Molina completely won the fight. That's outrageous.
Yeah, it's a close, tough fight. It could go either way, you know. I mean, it's just.
It wasn't Paul Williams versus Laura, you know. I guess, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, selective outrage, that's what I call it in the sport. You know, when it benefits you, Golden Boy gets really upset. You know, what's funny is the man in the black hat and all that stuff. And then you fast forward to Molina versus Kirkland, and who's screaming at a ringside official and he shouldn't be going near is Eric Gomez, the matchmaker for Golden Boy. Just qualify him. Yeah.
It's outrageous that, and on top of it, I mean, look, for example, Bernard Hopkins against Pascal won.
oh, they made a big stink about it. They forced that rematch. Same thing with the Dawson. They were able to do that.
Right.
They were able to get Amir Khan the rematch. But, you know, when Lara gets robbed, it was silence, you know, and I think that really showed their colors little by little. And I don't know if they took it personal because I was crushing the issue so much. I mean, it's my job to be a manager, you know. And if they say I'm – that's why I am pro boxer. That's my job. And if I'm not pro boxer, then what does the boxer need me for? And if they don't like me because of that, then that's their decision. But, I mean, just like it's their job to promote and make the most money for the promotion, it's my job to make the most money for the fighter. And those are facts, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. How long are you locked down? Let me ask you that. How long is your fighter locked down?
I'll leave that to Walter Kane, who's my lawyer, you know. We're pretty locked in for over a year, you know. But like I said, I think we're going to be making a big move or bringing in a big power player, you know, to handle the power play on Golden Boy.
right. I understand what you're saying. Definitely, man.
I mean, you know, facts are stubborn things, and these guys, you look, the reality is Lara is the best 154-pounder by far, you know, and Canelo, you know what, it's what the fans are calling for, you know, it's not me, it's the media and the fans who pay for the tickets and who pay for the pay-per-views, who buy the tickets, you know, give them what they want, you know.
Absolutely.
I agree. Yeah, facts are really hard to deal with. It's very, very true. I wish you guys all the luck, you know, this weekend and as well as going forward. And please, you know, keep us apprised and come through any time, man.
No, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, and just make sure everyone tunes in. And then I think Lara's going to keep showing the world. You know, he's one of the top fighters out there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right.
So, all right, man. We will
all right,
talk to you soon.
All right. And another thing, you know, you guys make sure after the Lara review, everyone tunes in July 28th. You know, Robert Guerrero is going to make history. You know, he's fighting. He's going to be maybe the second Mexican-American ever to win four different titles in four different weight classes behind Oscar De La Hoya. So it's pretty unprecedented,
right?
jumping up two weight classes and having a 16-month layoff and fighting a tough, undefeated Turkish guy. You got to give a kid like that credit, you know?
Oh, well, absolutely.
Without question.
We'll be there.
Talk
we're
a little bit
be there
about
too.
That.
Yeah.
We've actually got about 4 minutes
ourselves
in.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, Robert does speak Spanish. You know, Robert's been doing Spanish articles in Mexico. He's English, Spanish, Mexican, good-looking, can fight. I mean, he's got the whole package. You know, he's got the great storyline. I mean, this kid, you're talking about a kid. Yeah, he's talking about a kid who was sleeping on hospital floors while his wife was going through cancer. And on top of that, he was working construction to pay for his wife's bills and still fighting guys like Martin Osorio and knocking them out in one round. I mean, it's just there's no other to say unbelievable. I mean, the kid, he's an unbelievable kid.
Yeah, he really is. The sky's the limit with him. And I'm excited to see him, you know, take a step into the 147-pound division. If he's successful, I mean, everything shifts yet again. I mean, people say this has been a down year for boxing. It's just a weird year. And it's not even
–
we're barely half over, you know.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
it's barely half over. And I'll tell you one thing. I mean, the kid's got star written all over him, you know. And I think he's going to shine against Adon, who's a real tough customer, trust me. By no means put it this way, he's a lot tougher than a lot of these other guys are fighting, you know. And it's Robert's first Showtime appearance, you know, especially first Showtime as a main event, you know, in San Jose. The kid sells tons of tickets there. He's a big attraction, and, you know, everyone's excited.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing about Robert, too, is that his whole team – I've known Robert for a lot of years. I've known his family for a lot of years. I've been to all, you know, mostly all of his fights, man, and, you know, I've been really cool with his family. But going back with Robert, it's not him alone. His team is really solid, man. His family are really, really tight, and it's a boxing family. I think that's what gives him an added edge a lot of the times, too, is that
it's a big boxing. His brothers are boxers. Randy,
yep.
As a matter of fact, little Randy Guerrero, he's going to be making his pro debut on the Andre Ward and Dawson card. September 8th, he's going to be turning pro. So, I mean, you know, the father is a great boxing trainer. You know, I think he's one of the top guys. He doesn't get credit for, you know, as much credit as maybe these Freddie Roshan guys like that. But, I mean, when you take a kid from scratch and you make him where Robert has gotten, you know, I mean, you got to give a guy like that credit. And Bob Santos, his manager, I mean, to be honest with you, I've been in camp with tons of guys. There's not a better nutritionist and he's the strength work that I've seen in a long time, I'll tell you that much. I mean, he worked at Castle Mayor for the first Corrales fight. I mean, if you guys remember that, he looked like a Roman god, you know, for that fight, and that was all Bob Santos.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody recently about his technique, and how good he is. He's kind of quiet about it, but he's very good. And
he doesn't want to take no credit. He's not that type of guy at all. But I'll tell you one thing. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. I mean, just, you know, he gets 5, 6, 7 different foods in there. I mean, he's just, I mean, to be honest with you, he makes these guys rock strong, you know, and he's a guy that's focused on Robert his whole career. But I'll tell you one thing. If Bob were to open up and start taking on other fighters and things, there's no doubt about it. He'll be one of the top guys in boxing. Not even a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited. You know, I just was laughing just because I planned on going to that, and I just remembered Golden Boys banned me from all their shows, so I won't do that.
Don't worry, if I keep pushing, I guess like this on Canelo, I might be banned too. So we'll be able to watch the fight together.
Yeah, you're almost banned too with that.
Cool. Well, enjoy, man, and as always, good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you next time.
Same, brother. Thank you very much. Okay. Everyone, thank you very much. Have a great day. All right.
You too.
There you go.
I guess I won't be going to San Jose. I had some plans, too.
You know what? Whoa. I think you got a way around that one, man, especially it's in my hometown at the HP Pavilion. Trust me, you can't keep a San Jose boy out of my spot. So don't worry about that. Hey, you know,
I was originally born in San Jose, so I should have some good luck there.
Right. you know, talking about, you know, Robert the Ghost Guerrero, when he was talking about his dad, you know, bringing – a lot of people don't even know this, but, you know, Ruben Jr., which is Robert's older brother, he was a guy that was, you know, in the Olympic team with Oscar De La Hoya. He was, you know, he went and boarded with him and stuff, and he had a promising career himself, you know. But unfortunately, if I remember correctly, and don't take me for sure, but if I remember this correctly, I think Ruben Jr., the reason he fell out of boxing is because he ended up having relations with his girlfriend. They ended up having a child, so he had to drop the boxing thing off and then go look for a job. If I remember correctly, but don't quote me on that.
I won't. I'm not going to repeat that story ever again. I've got enough problems.
Yeah.
Oh, man. People wanting to kill me.
That's all I do.
Is
letter, you know? You want to call in right now? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're rolling it through over here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. Don't forget to listen to the Boxing Fix on Sunday nights, 5 Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. There wasn't a show last week because the host had something to Joe Sebastianelli had some engagements. He had his prior engagements. He had to go with his family. And actually keep his family in prayers. Where he's at PA, there's some fires, and his family have lost their homes due to that. So keep his family in your prayers and stuff. Also, make sure to tune in to Noche de Boxeo on all Spanish sister station that we do have every Monday night, 5 Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time, so you'll be sure to tune in and listen to that. We have our next guest is going to be calling in a short bit, as soon as Gabriel lets me know. And then we got our fight schedule, we got our predictions, and we have our analogy of the fights that are coming this weekend. But if you want to call in, 347-215-7598, definitely can. Be sure to pick up your June Undisputed Fight magazine. We put a lot of work, a lot of dedication to that. Look, we're talking about addiction into that magazine. So just, you know, support it as much as you can. Talk about supporting. Let's talk about a little bit about supporting. In Folsom, California, which is about a few, I think it's like 45 minutes away from Sacramento, the main town, Sacramento, our state capital for California. You can go and visit myself and Gabe. We're going to be doing a live broadcast show with a live audience for a charity youth boxing fundraiser. That's July 14th on a Saturday, and it starts at 8 p.m. Now, this is not going to be for kids. It's just going to be for adults because it is going to be in front of a bunch of nightclubs and stuff, but the ticket price is $25 each, which includes 2 premium cigars, scotch, and rum tasting, and it's going to have some music, ladies, you know, and if you're a lady, there's going to be men there. There's going to be some top prospects there, too. There's going to be a meet and greet, and also there's going to be a silent auction for items, including personal sparring sessions and raffles for T-shirts, posters, and hats. But the best part of it about it is that you're going to be able to hang out with myself and Gabriel. I don't know if that's going to be the best part, but, you know, with radio, we're going to be going live interviewing fighters on the show. Now, if you want tickets, if you want to get some tickets and you're around the Bay Area or you're over there in Sactown, you can call 916-947-6065 and ask for Rob. Or you can call 916-672-1867 for Martin. And group rates for 10 or more are available. And be sure to go out there. You know, I you know what? He did give me the address to that, so I'll give that out to really, really quick, but he just didn't send it to me in the email. It's going to be at the Powerhouse Pub in Folsom, California. So go ahead and Google that, check it out, and like I said, 8 o'clock, and they're not going to close the doors until the cops come knocking. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be exciting, and I think because you and I are there, that's why it's an adults-only event. I'm not sure, but somebody called me today and asked me what bikini size I wear. I don't know if they called you for that, but I don't know. We'll see what that's about.
You know, I was asked a long time ago to be part of the what was it for? Oh, yeah, for San Jose. They were having the ring card girls, remember? Go out there and judge and stuff. So.
That's right. We are fine judges of ring card girls. It's true.
Yeah. So, if you do want to participate in the boxing charity, email us at leavingtheringgmail, and whatever we can take. This is for the kids. What it is basically it's to keep the boxing clubs in Northern California running, keep them going, keep the kids off the streets. You know, we have enough problems. You know, Stockton is it's been pretty bad over here in Stockton, California. Modesto, too, has been pretty, awful. Along the other little small towns around and stuff. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we have programs that are going to occupy these kids, you know, keep them out of juvenile hall, keep them out of even thinking about doing a crime. And that's just the way of doing it, man. A lot of these kids out here are either fatherless or broken homes, or they live with both parents, but the situation is not good. So they need an outlet. And what better outlet that you can get the aggression out of a small child? Hey, put some gloves on him, let him hit the punching bag, and let him bond with the other kids that have either similar situations or they don't have those situations, but they can learn for those kids that are not in those types of situations. So it is a good deed. And like I said, myself and Gable, we're going to be taking our time on Saturday, which Saturday night there is going to be fights. But I think if I remember correctly, the coordinator said they are going to put some screen TVs up there so you don't miss the fights.
Except I'm not allowed to go to them. I just get to be there, but
right.
I'm banned from seeing those two. And B cup is the answer. I'm a B cup. we're waiting on our next guest, and here he is. Boom. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead. Like I said, if you want to find out some more information, you need the time, the date, the address, go ahead and email us. We're going to put it up on our website as soon as they have the flyer and everything ready. So then we can post it on our website and put it up on Twitter and Facebook as well. Again, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can here on Elite in the Ring. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, but you got to get past Mr. David Chen. Let's see if we have Gabriel on the other line yet. Yeah, hopefully we do. Gabe, you there yet? No. Not here. Not here, man. Hey, good congratulations. Shout out to Brandon Gonzalez, who's out of Sacramento, California. He got his win. He got his victory. Same thing with Mike Dellis. And
I'm back.
There we go. And he's back.
And I am here with Super Bantamweight champion Nonito Donaire. He's a multi-division champion. He's looking down the barrel of a fight coming up next weekend for a unification match for the IBF belt as well. And then looking at a really star-studded division. I welcome to the show Nonito, the Filipino Flash Donaire. Welcome, Nonito.
Thank you. Good afternoon, guys. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Dave, why don't you start off? This is my co-host here, Dave Duenas. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Yeah, we've had Nonito on quite a few times, man. On the radio show. Hey, Nonito, how you doing, brother, first off?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Thank you.
That's good to hear. Hey, you know, I know that you keep up with the fans, what the fans are saying. I know you keep up. I mean, Twitter is an amazing thing. You know, everybody is very brass on there. They're going to obviously tell you exactly what they feel or you know about yourself or the fights are coming up. But let me ask you this. Do you in any way feel that you have kind of dropped the ball a bit with the fights that have been made when it comes to you and an opponent?
Not really. I mean, you know, the guys that I'm fighting, guys who have credentials, you know, who are former world champions or world champions or became world champions afterwards, you know, so they have credibility in fighting me, fighting them, and as you can see, the not just me, but the network also went for it. I mean, usually networks will not go for somebody they think is boring or stuff like that. So okay, I just go out there. Usually, you know, I wanna accomplish the goals that I have, fight the best out there if it's possible. But that's always been me.
Now, when you talk about credentials, the one thing that people are going to go nuts over by hearing you say that is that, okay, well, Rigondeaux, what credentials does he not have enough to meet you in the ring? I mean, when we spoke to your trainer, he said it was coming from you and himself. He said that, you know, that's not a fight you guys were interested at that time. Has that mind frame changed? Does he now have the credentials for you to step in the ring with?
Like credential-wise, yeah, he's an amateur Olympic champion, but that stays an amateur. You can't bring that at a professional level. As you know, throughout history, you know, guys who are who didn't become a gold medalist became a world champion, while the other gold medalist it never became a world champion. So it doesn't matter what you do outside the professional level. But I still believe that his credentials need to be with better fights. And if they do want to make it happen, I would propose like a system, like say me with Mars, them with Nishioka, winner takes all. Who wins after that? I mean, I think that would be a good fight. You know, I think that's more of a credible thing. I mean, I'm always willing to stick with this to fight the best out there. And you know, I want to clean up. The more that people are talking about it, the more that I want to clean up this division. You know, I want to go for Rigondeaux for his belt, and that's the only reason why I would fight the guy, because he has the belt that I want. You know, and same with Morris, you know. Whoever steps in, whoever makes it happen, but I really want to clean up this division just to prove to everybody, not that I need to prove to anybody, but to me, I think it's going to be fun to do this.
You're at that point, too, I think, in your career, almost like Oscar De La Hoya was, where you like he did with welterweight. Like, you plant your flag and go, all right, this is going to be the one where I really set my legacy. I agree with you. I mean, you've always tried to be more than just a fighter. You see the business end of all this as well. And I'd like to see the Rigondeaux fight, but I want it, I think, like you do, to mean something when we get there, instead of just playing fantasy boxing and throwing you guys into the ring now, where it probably isn't as lucrative as it would be like 2 years down the line. Would you agree?
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, this is why, you know, but a lot of people don't understand the whole negotiation process, you know. A lot of people don't understand what goes behind the closed doors, you know. They think that, oh, Nonito is running, oh, this guy and this guy. No, that's why I'm a fighter for a reason. I fight, you know. But like I said, you know, I think that it's an excellent idea to prepare the best in a tournament somehow, you know, and fight each other. I mean, I think, like I said, I want to clean up the division, but money will come. I mean, I get business-wise, but I just kind of want to make it happen in terms of, you know, my goal is that it's becoming undisputed.
Now, speaking of cleaning up the division, you made a move to clean up the sport. At least for yourself, you're declaring yourself clean, and you're entering under 24/7, 365 a year testing with WADA. Can you talk about that decision and what led to it?
Well, for me, you know, I've always been a team fighter. Growing up, people have always told me that I can't be nothing, you know, I'm nothing. That's always going to be when I grow up. So I have a lot of proof to myself. And do this proves to me where I came from, and where I'm at now. I made it because I did it. I worked hard and I made it happen. And I think that's good for boxing, with all the negativity going around. I think that it's a positive thing. And Fox, you know, gets hurt when you have people positive things out there, you know. And it helps. I hope that he finds the fighters to do the thing. I think it's a good thing to do it. But, you know, my fans deserve to know that they're supporting a guy who's doing everything that God has given, you know.
We're getting a little bit of echo. You don't happen to have the radio on where you're at. That might be it.
No, I don't. That's why I'm getting feedback for some reason. That's why I'm like getting feedback. But I don't have to. I'm actually just walking around.
Okay, it probably just be the reception of where he's at right now. But yeah, yeah.
Okay, it actually sounds a little better now. In terms of, you know, what are the scenarios, and you talked about this, if a guy tests positive, because, like, Bob has endorsed this, but there's a lot to be worked out. For you, it's not about if the other guy decides to do VADA testing or not, right? You're willing to do it even if the other guy doesn't submit to the testing.
With me, I don't force anybody. I don't force it upon themselves to do it. You know, I encourage them to do it. You know, I invite them to do it. But if they don't want to do it, you know, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to force them to do it. But I believe that, you know, to do it and prove everybody that you can please support, you know, it's good. You know, but I'm not going to force them to do it. You know, but you guys, if they do it and they somehow test and it's a positive, you know, then for me, it doesn't matter. You know, I've always told everybody, it doesn't matter if you're on it or not, they're going to prove to you that the proper mentality, the proper work of a man's ethic and work ethic will defeat anybody out there who's on it, you know, with the proper heart.
Floyd Mayweather is the guy that is credited with getting this started. You know, he did his first testing with Mosley, and now it's kind of a logical progression where you're going to do it 24/7, 365 for the rest of your career. Is this just a natural progression? And do you think it had to take the fighters themselves to take action? Because if we would have waited for the commissions and everybody else to do this, it just wouldn't happen.
Well, you know, everybody has their own opinion of things. You know, with me, I just agree. You know, everybody has their own agenda as well. I just do the things that I do for my fans and for what I believe in, and that is fair and honest, you know. And that I have nothing to hide, no matter what. So, I mean, like I said, people have their agendas, people have their opinions, and no matter what it is, you know, I do the things that I do because I believe in it, you know what I mean?
No, there's one other thing, you know, I wanted to get into, and it's something that comes up a lot. You probably get hit with this question a bit, that you work with Victor Conte, and you were up at Undisputed for three fights leading up to Montiel, or, you know, those three fights, including the Montiel fight. Then you went off to Vegas for two fights, and you went the distance, and you weren't quite the same guy. You've gone back to Conte and Undisputed Gym in general. Can you talk about that journey and the decision to return back to Undisputed?
I think it's more of learning what works for me. You know, I moved to Vegas, you know, and wanted to try something different. But, you know, being away from my team definitely ended from reaching my potential. So when I realized that, that's why I'm here in the Bay Area with my team, you know, because they just believe in me. And when there's a lot of positive mentality, positive mind together, you know, your potential is endless. You know, you can go beyond.
Dave,
over to you.
Yeah, let me ask you, with your relationship right now with Top Rank, how is that going? And when you talk about negotiations, you know, when you talk about fans not knowing the business side of the sport, you know, and what you have to go through, are you in on hands with that? I mean, with those some of the decisions that your team is making. And how much are you involved in it?
I let Cameron Duncan do his thing, you know, but I give him names that I want to fight. And then he comes back to me, you know, the guy gets paid $100,000, now he wants $900,000 because he knows he's fighting you. So that's all they tell me is that the guys are after too much money, this and this and that, you know. So, but I do give them names, and they get back with different names, and then I choose from that, you know. because that's the negotiation they want. And if I pursue the negotiating with the other guys that I want, it's going to take a while. So I'm going to sit up for about almost a year just to get negotiation to go. I'd rather fight than wait for somebody. If they're not willing to fight me, you know, I'll open up to them, you know. But if they're not willing to fight me because the money's too small for them or this and this and that, or they just want to times it by 9 times or 5 times to come out, you know, there's a lot of fighters out there that I can fight. That's, you know, the fighters fight.
Right,
you know,
right.
The only reason fighters can make is because there's managers, and managers are not happy. Promoters are not happy with the amount that they're getting. So, of course, they're not going to make it happen. You know, but like I said, there's a lot of things that goes on beyond just negotiation with two fighters. Two fighters talk all their shit, all their stuff, you know.
Right.
But yeah. It's not going to happen if the two managers and promoters aren't seeing eye to eye.
Absolutely. No,
I
agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with that. Now, you know, first off, was very, very high on you in the beginning. The first time I witnessed you and when you even came on, I mean, I was like, you know, pound for pound, one of the best fighters, you know, from the Bay. You've represented the Bay. But I cannot lie to you that I kind of fell off of it. And I'm going to tell you why. You know, to me, you've had some certain pauses in your career. And in, right now, like you said, that's not your fault. That's managers. But do you feel that when these managers or your manager – They're fighting for a certain fight, or they end up giving you a fight that really, honestly, it's not a fan friendly fight or progressional fight for yourself, that you're allowing or your manager's allowing these other guys that allowing them to grow and get better, so it makes it a much more difficult fight for you. Do you see it like that, or do you just look at it like, you know what, you know, I just got to play the way the game is played.
For the fight, it usually goes of what they give me. If they are going to be defensive, it's going to be a defensive fight. You know, if the guys are going out there balls out like Montiel, there's going to be knockouts, you know. And that's the reason how fights become exciting. I mean, the last two fights I fought, the guys have been really protective or defensive, you know, regardless of all the crap they're talking, that they're going to knock me out, they're going to go out there and do this, but they never did. You know, but you gotta understand that, you know, the guys that I'm fighting have credentials. Now, if you look at it that way, I mean, who the hell is Keon Kennedy or whatever he's fucking or whatever his name is? Why my friend here? You
no,
know,
go ahead.
Man.
We're on
cable.
You know what I'm saying?
We're on the internet.
Go ahead,
you know, but you get what I'm saying? It's like it comes to it. I the guys that I'm fighting have credentials. They're world champions or who are undefeated, you know, they're good fighters, you know. So when it comes to credential, it doesn't matter if the fight was boring or not. I tried to make it happen. But the point is, you know, it had a potential for a good fight, except that the moment they feel my power, they become a turtle, and they hide in their shell. And you saw it in Narvaez when he opened up in the second round or third round. I heard him, and ever since then, he wouldn't let go of that guard. Same with Vasquez. The moment he felt my power, he wouldn't let go of that guard. And that's the thing, is they're wary of my power in it. And again, going back, the fight happens because of the fact that it's what they give me. If they give me an exciting fight where I can work with a lot, then, you know, then it's going to be a very exciting fight with full of power and speed and knockout. But if they give me a fight where it's just defensive, I got to break that defense. You know, and breaking a defense, it's a hard game. You know, because you bore yourself to death because this guy doesn't want to be in there. You lose respect for it, for the person that goes in that ring.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, you did, in your last fight, you were trying the most, I mean, you were trying the most to knock him out, get him out of there, and you did try to make it an exciting fight. My only critical part about it was that, and tell me if this is true. I can be way off on this, brother, and I hope I'm not sounding like, you know, I'm being a jerk about it, but I got to ask you these questions because these questions, you know, are been burning at me. But to me, I almost felt like Nonito Donaire fell in love with his power. Like, I didn't see any adjustments. I saw spots that the late Nonito, the guy that knocked out, the Raging Bull, that guy would have figured out these last two, other fighters and would have got him out of there. Am I right about that? I mean, did you almost fall off of there and went back and looked at these fights and go, man, I should have done this. I should have made this adjustment. And if you haven't, I mean, if you have you went back into the ring kind of settling down and going, you know what, this is what I need to work on so that next time a guy that has a shell defense, I can break through it and I can get him out of there a lot quicker.
Definitely. I agree with you in some ways, there's things that I needed to work on to break the guy's shell. But in terms of that, I'm a pure counter puncher. That's my go-to style. That's how I knock people out when they don't expect it. Now, you can't knock somebody out when they expect every punch coming and seeing it because they have their block. Now, going to the body, they drop their head, you get headbutt. I mean, I've simulated this in sparring, where I drop a guy, with body shots, but they drop their head, and we end up banging heads all the time. And that's not the reason why I don't try to go for the body shot too much, is because with great power, they end up doing something to protect themselves, and that is headbutt. I'm not fun with those headbutts, not that I'm afraid of them, but I wanted to do it in a clear manner where spicy,
Right.
The thing is, I'm not fun of breaking guys' defense, if
but
you're a fighter.
You
fight.
Right. But let me ask you, Nonito, do you think you kind of fell into the I need to please the fans rather than fight a fight, a smart fight, fight a strategic fight.
I did. Because the thing is, I can beat all these guys to jab. I can win like Mayweather. I can jab around, I can dance around and beat everyone and not get hit at all. And I did fall for that. The thing is, I'm still going to try to do it for the fans. The reason why I'm here is because of the fans. I appreciate the fans. I don't want to bore them to death. I want them to have excitement. And being a fighter, being a warrior, I don't mind putting my life into that. I signed my life, to get into that ring. And it doesn't matter. Either you take me out, I'm going to take you out. That's the mentality I go in there. And I did fall in love with pleasing the fans. I want to please the fans. The fans to me are the people that I am very I'm very happy and I'm very respectful and I owe everything to them because they gave me this inspiration, determination, because they're excited, The fans to me are something that makes me move, and I did fall in love with the power because I want to please the fan and I'm still going to try to please the fan.
Right. Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to Gary.
Sorry, I was on mute and I was jumping in. Something you said that really interested me, you said you don't really like to break another guy's defense. Is it just because it's just not your nature? You're more of a counterpuncher? Why is that?
Yeah, it's if I had to, I will, but I'm not fond of it. I believe that two guys should engage, and knock each other's head out, there's time to be defensive. There's time for all that, but you can't use it throughout the whole fight just because you're afraid to get it. Go for it. Go and just try to do your best rather than try to survive and make it and stay at the end of the fight. Nonito's going to knock me out. What I'm saying? That doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not fun with that. I respect guys who go out there and fight. There's time for it. There's time in a real tactic, in a tactical battle, there's time for defense and there's time for offense. You can't win. And everybody will know that you can't win with just defense alone.
Now, let's talk about this. To me, I thought your peak, a peak for you, you've had a few of them in your career, was taking out Montiel the way you did. Just blew right through him. How close are you now working back at Undisputed with that whole crew of guys, a wonderful team? I had a chance to meet a few of them. I was up there recently. Heading into this fight with Jeffrey Mathuvala.
I think this is the best I've ever trained, and I think the more that I'm fighting, the more that I'm learning all this, they say that when you get older, you decline, but I believe that the more older I get, I just become stronger, I think that this is going to be one of the fights that you'll see a difference, Nonito Donaire, in the sense of work ethic, just an overall experience fighter.
Where do you think you are at as your evolution? You strike me as, this might be premature, but you're kind of like a, got a Bruce Lee kind of mentality the way you look at it. You're always looking at new ways to improve your physique, new ways to improve your technique, new ways of fighting. How do you feel? Do you feel like you're ever going to be a complete fighter?
What was that last one?
Do you ever feel like you're going to be a complete fighter? And how close are you to
that? A lot of people would say that I can't be a complete fighter already because of the fact that I can fight in, I can fight out, I can jab, I can move, I can box, you know, but you can never complete yourself. I've always believed that you can always learn different things every single time. No matter if you're pound for pound the best in the world, this and that, I think that you can always learn from everything around you, you know. And that's what I teach. Get better every time. If I'm good, I want to be great. If I'm great, I want to be beyond that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the mentality I have. And I believe that you can always learn.
How do you see the fight going? And if you had your pick after the fight, who would you want next?
Well, I believe that this fight, you know, I don't know what to expect with the taller guy because I've never faced a guy who's taller than me in this. At least this much taller than me, you know. So it's going to be an interesting fight, but you know, I'm going to try to go for a knockout because of the fact that, you know, I want, you know. But if not, I'm going to try and do my best. And after this, you know, I'm pretty tight. I think they got a few guys signed up for me, you know. But again, I want to put that box off between me and the top four. That's me, Nick Yoko, Morris, and Brickendown. You know, I think that should happen. So no one can say no, and no one can ask too much money or anything like that. So there's no excuse.
I agree. Let's get it on. Those are all great fights, and I want to see them all. I thank you again for coming by and for taking the stand that you are with BADA. I think it's just... It's very brave you were all in the way you are. And I appreciate it, man. And thank you for your time.
Definitely.
Thanks,
with the VADA thing, man.
It.
I mean, you know, it's good to see that, you know, that you're definitely taking head on with it and stuff. Just keep doing what you're doing, brother, man. We're going to keep watching. And like I said, you represent the Bay well. So keep it up.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. I'll always do my best, man. So. You'll find me in your top sooner or later.
All right, brother.
I'll see you at the fight, so I'm going to be down there for it. I'm really looking forward to it, man. I'm very excited.
Cool.
The things I've been hearing out of your gym, they say you're just back to form and just out of control and ready to rock. So I'm looking forward to it.
The Monster Man. The Monster Man is back, man. So,
the Monster Man.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Bye, man. You take
care. Bye-bye.
Bye. The Monster Man. It's funny.
Yeah, the Monster Man. You know, talking about the credentials, and this is what I kind of find this kind of weird. Which, in terms of when he was talking about credentials with of accomplishments in the pro rankings, I have to kind of lean and tend to agree with him. But when if you look in the Ring magazine, in the junior featherweights, Rigondeaux is actually above him, which I kind of find that kind of, I don't know, weird. To tell you the truth.
Yeah. Notice the sound got better. It was Nonito's phone. Stop yelling at us.
It was
Nonito's
phone.
He was calling from Vegas somewhere, so I'm not really sure. Well, it was the Vegas phone, actually. I don't know where he was. It might have been inside the gym. The service was bad. We're sorry. It's just the nature of live radio. It happens. Dave, I'm going to try to find that schedule for us.
Absolutely. You know, and... you know,
do you want to see a tournament? Do you think that's possible? I know Richard Schaefer has come out and said that you know, we would be very interested in doing an Abner Modest fight. So we'll see. You know?
I don't know. You know, I mean, you know,
I'd like to see it.
The times when you see, this is the thing that gets a bit confusing for Nonito, and I think it hurts him, is that he ends up talking like a business guy, but then he goes, well, I don't do any of the business. You know, it's Cameron Duncan. I think that this is my feeling and my thought, you know, is that that's why sometimes I think Twitter has done more damage to fighters than good. You know, because if when you're on there and you're tweeting stuff, you know, people hang on that and people hold you in to be truth. So it to me, it messes them up, you know.
I don't know. You know, I just think, I don't know. I think he was pretty honest, you know. I mean, as a fighter, he's saying, this is who I want. Will it happen? I don't know. You know, Bob is kind of singing the same tune, that we want to do this fight. And we want to, you know, we want to go with Morris, and who knows, you know, the guys throw out things to the press, and I don't really, you know, like he said, it's hard to tell what really goes on behind closed doors. What he
Absolutely.
Wants is not necessarily going to be what he gets, you know, and or what we want, you know, generally isn't what we get. But I don't know, he was kind of going at him, and for once I was the nice guy, and he handled it pretty well.
You're honest.
You were just honest.
I was being honest with them because, you know, I mean, look, and I've told this to fighters and other people, you know. It's like, look, I'm going to ask you the question. It doesn't necessarily mean I don't like you, but I'm just going to ask you the truth of what people are thinking and the way that you know, we talk about fighters on leaving in the ring, you know. I'm not going to be all buddy-buddy, rub elbows with you. If I see you at the fights, and a lot of fighters can attest to this, I'm cordial. I'm like, hey, how you been? How you doing? And I walk away. I don't try to make you a family member. I don't try to make you my best friend in the whole wide world, because I know that at the end of the day, I got to do my job, and that's break them down and then ask you the questions that people really want to hear, you know. And what Nonito is that, hey, I'm not the only one that kind of felt that he fell in love with his power and stuck with it. When you look at his fights before that, you had a guy that was adjusting. You had a guy that had a lot of talent that would have figured out what was not getting him by. Did he win? Absolutely, he did win. Do we hold him in a higher standard? Of course we do. That's what we're supposed to do, you know. And there's fights out there that I think, honestly, when we talk about credentials, like he was mentioning, you're right. I think he is an accomplished fighter as a pro. Abner Morris is an accomplished fighter as a pro. But that's what makes boxing so great. You know, Rigondeaux is the new kid on the block. And has he been explosive? Has he caught in our imaginations? Absolutely. But now the standard is now transferred to him, because now he's got to stay that explosive. He can't believe his own hype, because he has some valid, tough other champions or contenders that can burst that bubble in any given day if you're not prepared.
That's true. I mean, like what he was saying, look, who's beyond Kennedy? It's like, well, Kennedy's been in some good wars, but yeah, he hasn't won a good one in a little while, and he's a banger. You know, he's kind of like, on any given night he could win, and on any given night he could lose. A guy like Rigondeaux should do what he did to him, but it was still very impressive. 5 knockdowns, like, good Lord, you know, it was a brutal performance.
It is. Very, you know, I'm very impressed with Rigondeaux, but at the same time, you know, it's okay. It's against and like Nonito said, you know, who in the F is he? He's right. He is right. But the same could be said for the fighters that he did fight, which, yeah, they were champions, but one guy was small and jumped up, and some fight fans kind of feel that way. Well, who in the F is he? Where Abner Morris, this guy was fighting recognizable, tough oppositions in a tournament he decided to join. Did it diminish him or did it make him better? We're only going to find out when he does fight the other two or the other three, you know, which is Moreno, who we haven't mentioned. There's another guy as well.
Anselmo Moreno, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. You know, there's other guys. He actually didn't mention him. But he's also, you know, the divisions are kind of shifting. You know, every few years it happens. Everybody can't make weight anymore. They start to move up. I'm not really in a rush with Rigondeaux. That fight will happen. It doesn't need to happen now. It's like Alexander Bradley. It's like everybody, like, here's two names. Throw them in. It makes more sense that Morris and Donaire would fight, because they both kind of were the top dogs at the 118. They're not kind of. They were. Abner kind of had the better resume, but Donaire was more of a draw, and he certainly took out the top dog in Montiel and did it in impressive fashion. It's a natural fight. Rigondeaux was just coming into the consciousness. And to a guy like Nonito, it is fair for him to say, who the F is this guy? He's got belts in multiple divisions. You know, he's been a headliner in Madison Square Garden. He's been headliners elsewhere. He's going to be headliner next weekend. he is kind of the man among the smaller guys. So it is kind of fair to say, and it's not fair for us to hold Rigondeaux's prodigious talent and his amateur career against Donaire. He's been busy being a professional and building a career for himself. It'll happen. I'm just learning how to be patient, but I think people have to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, if anything, we all have to learn how to be patient in some areas, you know. And at the same time, you know, when you have a fighter that says, look, man, it's not me. You know, I mean, if managers, if they don't get along, they don't get along. If they can't come down in agreeing in negotiations, unfortunately, it does reflect on the fighters. But that's why we do these type of interviews, so that we can be brought back down to that level, to have a more of an understanding that this is a business, that, you know, we want the best fights always provided for us. And I've always said this, you know, fight fans, boxing heads, whatever you want to call yourself, fight freaks, we're like spoiled brats. We don't get what we want. We have a temper, and we start banging our feet and hands on the floor. You know, we act like 2-3-year-olds, you know. If you don't believe me, look at some of your guys' tweets. Look at some of the stuff you put on Facebook. You know, I'm guilty of it. Everybody's guilty of it. But that's why we do these type of radio shows and ask these type of questions, so that we can get more closer to the truth. And I like what Nonito had to say here on leaving in the ring. I like the way he conducted himself, and I like the way he handled the questions. You know, we threw fastballs, and he caught them, and he threw them back out. So that's the way it goes, man. We want to do that fight schedule?
Yeah, I'm all set. Hang on one second. All right, so Friday, June 29th. Sorry, I got attacked by an animal. Friday, June 29th, at the Omega Products Arena in Corona, California, on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Ruslan Provodnikov, 21-1 versus Jose Reynoso, 16-3-1. I think Provodnikov burns through this guy in like 5 rounds. I watched him in the gym a couple days ago. I've got he's the lead story on MaxBoxing.com tonight. My story, interview with Freddie Roach, Vadim Korolov, his manager, as well as Ruslan himself. I think they made an interesting choice. You know, he fought in January, and they could either fought, I think it was Mike Alperato they were talking about, to fight for a title, and then that kind of fell through. And I think it's kind of fortuitous, because then he got offered to be a sparring partner with Manny Pacquiao, and they figured,
right,
let him do that and get a higher profile doing that than he could with any fight that he could take, unless it was, you know, Floyd or somebody, like a giant name. And through that, he went to the next level, he said. The thing that he learned most was that he can hang with the world-class level, and it changed him. It made him move his head more. He's a little quicker. He's learned how to off-speed pitch. I mean, he was sparred every day with Manny Pacquiao. Every sparring session, he was there. And he became the chief guy. Manny's endorsed him with his power. You know, his power is very good. I think he burns through this guy. I think we're going to see a new Ruslan Provodnikov. It'll be interesting.
I don't know, man. You know, I mean, Reynoso is a tall, lanky guy. The height difference is completely different. I mean, you know, when I hear you about the whole Manny Pacquiao sparring, but when you got a shorter guy, you tend to do shorter things. You tend to, you know, look for things that a shorter man's going to do, which is obviously Pacquiao has the speed. But when you have a bigger guy, there's a different type of angle now that you have to be prepared for, that you have to embrace yourself for some awkward punches that are going to be thrown, because it's not going to be from the familiar place where a shorter guy would throw them. I think that sometimes sparring, even though Manny is a great sparring guy, but sparring somebody that is the opposite of the guy you're supposed to fight against, sometimes to me it can do a little bit of a damage in your game plan, because it obviously can enhance the head movement, it could pick up the hand speed, but could it make him become into more of a comfort zone, believing that, well, I've been in there with the best. This guy is not the best, so I should be able to walk over him. And then he ends up slipping and falling apart because maybe didn't train hard enough or did not look for the punches from a tall, lanky guy. I think Jose has a strong possibility of upsetting him. I'm just not sure when he makes a quote saying that he's like Mauricio Herrera that he should be able to come out like that and fight Povetkin the way Herrera did. I'm not sure if that's the way you want to fight the Russian kid. You know what I mean? You want to be a little bit more intelligent. Herrera's Herrera. You can't fight the way he fights. You got to be Jose Reynoso. So that's the only concern that I have. He's got to come out being him. You can't try to come out and mimic another guy.
I agree. You know, I think it's going to come down to just being yourself in there, like always. You know, fighters, their identity, they need to figure that out in order to go to that next level. I think Provodnikov has figured out who he is. He said he wasn't always that confident that he could be on that Pacquiao level. And going into that first sparring session, he was really nervous. And not nervous like, you know, oh, God, he's going to kill me, but can I do this? And after that first session, he was like, yep, I can hang at this level. And they both adjusted to each other throughout the whole camp. Freddie said there was like different stages of one guy figuring out the other, and then the other guy would make adjustments. And he said it was great for both of them. And so I just think, you know, I don't sound like fights, I mean, this guy's not Manny, but I think he's just going to be on a different level. And they're going to get right through him and keep their position. It's an important fight, and they understand that how tough it is, and he's
right.
Got to stay very focused and win it. So I'm taking Ruslan in six. I could be wrong. Body shots.
I think the power that he brings, yeah. Ruslan's power, just, you know what I mean? I think that's the difference, too, in this fight, you know? So, I mean, if Reynoso comes out trying to fight Herrera, I think that's just a bad game plan. It's a terrible game plan. So, Ruslan, I would go with that. I'd say, though, I don't know. I would give Jose a few more rounds, man. But I think it's going to be a back and forth short night for the Mexican kid. Go ahead, though.
I mean, he's been stopped twice in his career, but it was early on. You know, he hasn't stopped for quite some time. He's lost to Dean Byrne. He's another tough kid. Gave him some good rounds. We'll see. You know. Moving forward, in support there, Roberto Castaneda, 21-1 versus Christopher Martin, 23-2-3. This is an interesting fight, too.
That is an interesting fight.
you want to go ahead? You go first on this one.
God, you know, the thing with Martin is that this guy, he takes no breathers, man. I mean, this guy, we talk about fighters that need to stay busy to try to sharpen their skills.
Dude,
yeah. You have at least take some breaks on tough fights to sharpen those skills. You know what I mean? You know, we certainly cringe at fighters that try to patent their records. Martin doesn't try to do that. There is no sandbags in what he tries to do. I'm not really sure, man. I'm not really sure. I don't know. I guess I got to hear what you have to say and then probably go off of that pick because I don't know. I don't think Martin can pull it off, man, unfortunately. I think that I think he's going to definitely have a stellar moment. He's going to give it all he can. But the sharpening is definitely – there's some dullness in there.
Yeah, you know, it is hard to say. You know, I had it all written up. I'm in, like, a prediction league that I just joined on a website, B-Side Boxing, and I had a whole post that I could actually recite from that I wrote last night, and I didn't save it. So I'm just going to have to wing it. Both these guys, it's interesting where they're at in their careers. You know, Christopher Martin is kind of a little bit of a skid. You know, they're competitive fights, but he's losing. He's obviously more of the boxer in this. He's kind of a pure boxer. Reminds you a little bit of Martinez. He kind of figures you out. He doesn't hit
right.
That hard. But he kind of figures you out, and then he starts to come on a little bit later. But he's coming off the loss in April to Orlandito. And with Castaneda, it's another kind of similar guy. But, you know, he lost in January. We've got, like, stopped in January in five rounds by a guy you've never really heard of, Felipe Urucuta. But he's come right back. And, you know, he beat a guy 22-8. Beat another guy in June 8th. That's 5-12-1. Hadn't won in like six fights or so. Knocked him out and won like he should have. So he's been active and he's been on a positive streak. But the level of opposition isn't as good. He's more the heavy-handed guy, but he's also only really fought in Mexico or Mexicali. So you wonder. He's 21. Is he a prospect that they're hoping? Let's see if he wins and goes to the next level. I got to go with Christopher Martin. He's got more experience. I think he's due to win one, so I'm going with him by unanimous decision.
That's, and you know what? That you know, makes a lot of sense. You're absolutely right and stuff. You know, I mean, the question is Martin taking these fights? Could he fall into just being an opponent and being satisfied and giving all he can give anymore to the sport? We don't know. Or does he have that hunger that says, you know what, I got to beat these odds. I have been falling short, definitely been looked at, overlooked at, and been used as an opponent. And now they may be looking at me as a stepping stone, a good name to pat another guy's record. I still think it's a tough fight for him. But I like to see his mind frame. I could see him winning this fight. I could definitely see him. This is a kid that does have really good boxing skills. I mean, there's something there special about him. But when we talk about hard matchmaking, this kid has been in the grind of hard matchmaking. So we'll have to find out, man. But I'll go with your pick. I think that's a good pick.
And you know, it was I was discussing the fight with the co-host of another radio show, Jenna Jay from On the Ropes. Over at Eastside Boxing. And one key thing that she said I thought was interesting, she's the person that got me into the prediction league, was confidence with Martin. You know, how does he react over that rough patch? Is it pissing him off, or is he giving in to it? If it pisses him off and it refocuses him, I think he just wins.
That,
I think
that's
it's
exactly,
a matter of
yeah.
style and experience.
Yeah,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Exactly what I was, you know, what I was going, you know, going to
yeah.
is that, you know, is he content of just being an opponent, or does he still have that hunger of saying, no, I'm not. I gotta move forward. That's the big question, you know. And I like to see him move forward because he is fun to watch, and he does come to try to win. He's just really been falling short end of the stick, just due to matchmaking. He's tough matched, man. I mean, he's, you know, he's in match very tough all the time.
Yeah, it's true. Now we're looking at Saturday night, June 30th, Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California. Showtime, Cornelius K9 Bundridge, 31-4 versus Corey the Jinx Sphinx, 39-6 for the IBF junior middleweight belt. I think it's going to be an ugly fight.
K9? Yeah.
Yeah, rough and tumble, a lot of hugging, a lot of moving, punches, clinches, in bunches.
It's going to be a K9 fight. Yeah, it's going to be
yeah,
a bump.
It's going to be a K9 fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Corey Spinks, he's definitely has been sitting down more on his punches because his legs have gotten much older. And it happens to a lot of the times with the mobile fighters, guys that are known to be slick, puffy punches and stuff, that when their legs go, which is supposed to be the first thing that leaves you in boxing, they tend to sit down a little bit more on his punches. He's had some some small marginal success because of power there. You know, this is a guy that does have boxing skills. He does know how to box. He's got an extensive, you know, career. But he's fighting a guy that his whole goal is to mangle you up. You know, he's got the Ricky Hatton, you know, syndrome. I mean, he's got a, you know, manhandle you and push you back and stuff, you know. So that's something to me that when you got slow legs, you know, you don't want to have slow legs against a guy like that, you know. You want to be able to be mobile. You want to be able to spin off the ropes and catch the guy in an opening. So I'm going to go with Bungridge, man. I think he's going to be too much. And he's a big, strong guy too, Bungridge. He's not the tallest dude in the world, but he is a big, muscle-bound type of guy. I think he's just going to manhandle Corey Spinks for some time. And it's going to wear out those old legs. And I could possibly see him stopping him, maybe making him quit in those later rounds, or just going in that unanimous. But Bungridge has got a good punch too that he brings.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's interesting. I just think, yeah, it's rough and tumble. I mean, maybe, you know, Corey has the straight punches and he's got the experience to get it done. But I think Bundridge is like the stronger guy, the harder puncher, and I think he just wears him down after a while and gets it done. I don't think it's a stoppage. It could be, you know, but it's going to be like a, oh, thank God this is over kind of fight, however it goes. So I'm going with Bundridge by however he gets it done.
I mean, punch. I mean, we've seen him knock out guys with a one big solid punch, you know. So he does have that. And Corey, you know, he's been knocked out by my smaller guys. I mean, Zab Judah, but Zab punches hard for his division, and he's a quick guy. Where Bungridge is not the fastest dude, but he does have that punch that can just turn out those lights. So I don't know. It's one of those things, man. I mean, I'm actually really interested in this fight. I think this is going to be somewhat of a fun semi co-feature event leading up to the main event.
Well, okay. Arislav Dulara, 16-1-1 in support versus Freddie Hernandez, 30-2. I think this is a fun fight. I think Freddie is tired of being disrespected. He's mad as hell. He's not going to take it anymore. But Arislav Dulara is on a different level. I think he wears him out, breaks him down, knocks him out like seven rounds.
Yeah, I mean, talk about we're not going to take it. Freddie Hernandez,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people were sold on what happened with him and Andre Berto, you know, thinking that Laura's going to take him out. I don't think so. This is a rugged guy, and he's not the biggest dude, though. I mean, Laura, to me, is the bigger guy. You know, even though Hernandez has dabbled at the 154 division early in his career, he's kind of up and down. He's one of those guys that take available fights for himself to try to get his name out there, you know. But when it comes to the skill department, you got to just lean over to Lara. This guy's slick. He's a southpaw. He punches hard. He's precise with his punches. He's got a radar in his eye, man. He knows how to zero in on the punches that need to be landed. The only way Hernandez, I can see him giving Lara a lot of fits is if he fights a Molina fight. Just be all volume and be able to take the punches his face are going to have to receive to kind of trail him all the way to the later rounds. I'm not really sure. I'm not completely sold on that, you know, because he's only been knocked out. I believe it's only once. If I'm pretty sure you're looking on the box. I think he was only knocked out once, and that was by Berto, right?
I believe it's only once. I wasn't looking at him, but okay. I'd already made my pick. But
yeah.
I mean, I do think it was a bit of a fluke. He got caught, and that was it. But still, you know, I just think that Laura's on he's only been knocked out.
Laura,
he's lost twice.
Right, and Laura doesn't have Berto's attitude in the ring. You know, these are two different, complete fighters, and that's why I like your pick. You know, it's more of a drag out in the rounds. So you're gonna see Laura, you know, pick it up, do what Laura does, man, which is pick you apart, and then eventually, you know, he doesn't. I don't know. I wouldn't sit here and say he goes for the kill, but the kill definitely comes to him, and he'll stab it immediately if it's open, and that's what Freddie Hernandez is up against. He's up against a very patient assassin. You know, this guy's going to take his time. He's a sniper in the ring. You know, he's going to sit there and he's going to wait and he's going to breathe calmly and he's going to wait for that perfect shot. So Freddie has to be a buzzsaw, man. I just don't know, though, if he can be a buzzsaw against a slick guy that's going to make you miss and may tire you out. It really depends on what Freddie was doing in the ring in preparations to a guy that you are going to miss a lot of shots. 30 shots, 30 punches. Out of 30 punches that are going to be thrown, you're probably going to miss 12 of them. And that takes out a lot of you when you're missing more shots than anything.
I agree. You know, it's I just think he's a class above. He's going to knock him out. He's going to break him down, knock him out.
Absolutely.
Gary Russell, 19-0 versus Christopher Perez, 23-2. Have you heard of Christopher Perez before? He's
No. When we talk about who in the F is this, that's one of them. That's still one of the who in the F is this category. But, you know, Gary Russell, man, I mean, Gary Russell's Gary Russell. I mean, let's just look at the team that he's with, you know. So you're going to end up getting what is, I don't know. What can we say, man?
The Haymanization of boxing.
Exactly, you know. So
it's
a weird
card. You've got, like, a K-9 Bundridge, you have Corey Spinks, mm-hmm. Don King in the main event. You got Lara, Golden Boy, and then you got, like, Heyman. Then you've got a diamond in the rough, Antonio Orozco, in support there. And I think that's a guy you really need to go see. I mean, it's a really good show. If I wasn't banned by Golden Boy, I'd go. Actually, I didn't. You know, I don't think I even tried to go through Don King's people. Maybe I should give that a shot. I think Don would enjoy my candor.
Actually,
but
you only have to go through Fantasy Springs. They're actually the ones that give the thumbs up.
No, actually, there's a list. I'm on a list.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. There we go.
Yeah, I'm taking Gary Russell. I'm taking Antonio Orozco. At the Atlas Arena in Lodz, Poland, Roy Jones Jr., 55-8, his previous opponent, Dawid Kostecki, got arrested. So he's going to be fighting Pavel Gluzowski. And I think that I'm going to go with the upset special here, Dave. Now, the guy's got 4 knockouts. He's only 17-0. But
right.
Roy's on his world tour. I think this dude glazes Roy Jones' eyes around the 9th round, takes him out. Just,
you know,
bang, done.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, he used to call himself one of the best hookers in the game.
Oh, wow. Wow, you went there.
Well, you know. When you prostitute yourself in the game, it just becomes dirty, and that's pretty much what it is. My prediction is I'm not going to watch it. I think Roy needs to hang him up. I have too much respect for Roy, even though that was a cheap shot of a joke. But, hey, that's how we keep ourselves smiling. We're almost at the end of our show. I don't know if we have any more fights.
Yeah, at the Torreón Centenario in Torreón, I almost sound like I knew Spanish, in Mexico. Marco
right.
Antonio Rubio, 53-6-1 versus Jorge Cota, 12-0. And that is your weekend fight schedule. And I'll take Rubio for that poor kid. 12-0 against Rubio, that's not fair. Oh,
not fair.
The Palace des Sports in Dijon, France. Murad Hakkar, everybody's favorite sprinter, 40-7 versus Bilal Latresh, 13-3. Talk about a club fight.
Yep.
All right. That's it.
The end of our fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Be sure to check out the Boxing Fix on Sunday nights and Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights. They both start at 5 Pacific time and 8 o'clock Eastern time here on Leaving in the Ring. Another show that I have fun with. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Like I said, we try to do our best to bring educational content and at the same time some fun content, fun interviews, and we just try to do our best, man. That's all we can do, and I hope you guys enjoy what we try to bring to the table. There's a lot of other people out there that do a fantastic job as well and stuff, so we just try to put in our 2 cents. Anyways, Gabriel, hey, man, have a good weekend. Please don't drink and drive, folks out there. And like I said, we'll be out doing a live broadcast July 14th. So come out and visit us, man. Chop it up, some boxing.
Absolutely. Dave, as always, great show. And I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later, brother.